Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, June 5th, 2007 Carrboro Board of Aldermen regular business meeting. The first item on our agenda is requests from visitors and speakers from the floor. I see that there appear to be two people signed up to speak on matters that are not already on our printed agenda. So I'm going to start by calling on Jay Hamm and then David DelVecchio. Jay, if you would come up to the microphone right up here and address the board, that would be great.
Well, first of all, I'd like to express my appreciation for the opportunity to speak with you guys. Regarding the well water use at the MLK Park for the Carrboro Community Garden Coalition. And basically over the last, I guess, two or three weeks, we've been doing extensive tests and research regarding the well. And you guys have been sent the findings that we had in an email today. And I just wanted to express to you guys that, you know, all of our research has shown that using the well is really the best source of water for the community garden, coupled with rainwater catchment. And we'd like to emphasize, you know, not pulling off of city water for that. And I guess just to open it up in case you guys have any questions regarding our findings.
I'm sorry, I wasn't at my desk today.
Okay.
I haven't looked at a computer today, which makes it a really nice day. So if you could just very, very quickly. So did you have the water tested?
We did have the water tested. And actually, I don't know the specifics on that because we just got the results back this evening. Mm. It is on this updated printout that we have that we can give to you. But basically, according to my brief interaction with Sammy Slade, the results looked really good, and as far as any potential bacteria problems in the well. And
is Sammy here? And
Sammy is here.
That?
Yeah, he can speak on that. But I guess the main thing is our findings found that we can access over 1,000 gallons of water a week with the well, and if we're using a cistern, that is going to provide ample water for the garden, given we expand it to the full 3/4 acre. We've also been working with some solar experts, one of which has signed up to present to you guys this evening, who have come up with a plan to use solar power to pump this water to a cistern. And I feel really strongly that this could be a real big positive for the town of Carrboro to have solar power happening on town property, creating solutions for, you know, for the public. And I'm sure David can address any of your questions on that. Also, most of the infrastructure that would be needed to implement this solar-powered pump and cistern plan, you know, we have confirmed donations for a lot of those parts that would be needed. And given the time that the community garden is discontinued there, the community garden would actually have equity in its investments that we put into the property. As far as if we were to tap in and use Owosso water, basically all our investments would be lost because you just abandon the lines that are run and all the labor that goes into that. So I don't know if you guys have any other questions that I might could answer.
Well, why don't we hear from David DelVecchio. If an issue comes up that you could address, then you let us know.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Jay.
Thank you. Good evening. Thanks.
I'm not going to address any of the water quality issues. If you have any, then Sammy could. He's the one that knows the most information. My expertise, as Jay was saying, is from accessing the water and getting it to the garden. I've been there pumping the well repeatedly and trying to get a flow rate, trying to see how deep is the well, where is the standing water. This is a lot of this that I'm saying is in the notes already. We initially found it at 15 feet and about 170 or so feet deep. There was no rain for weeks, and we were finding a flow rate around a quarter gallon a minute. It was going down. I think the lowest recorded was around a tenth of a gallon a minute, which is what the 1,000 gallons a week that Jay mentioned was based on, like the bare minimum, and figuring that that was still going to be good enough to water the garden when it was in full bloom, basically in the worst conditions in summer. So I've been donating my time so far, which is quite a bit, and willing to donate more. The findings that Samuel might present or that you have is before a chlorination treatment. So that was just what to start with, just so y'all are clear on that.
Before what?
Before the chlorination, or I guess the okay. Well decontamination, I think is what it's called. I just want to stress in the sort of spirit of the community garden how the well represents the appropriate technology there. When we're just lifting water out of a hole 100 feet or so and moving it horizontally, you know, a couple hundred feet, as opposed to pumping water out of University Lake, bringing it to Owassa, dealing with it, pumping it back up, it comes down anyway. It's a real appropriate use, you know, a minimal amount of energy used to actually get this resource that's right there. Like Jay said, it's gonna look good, I think, for the town. Especially when the costs are being absorbed not by the town as far as setting up the system. And then the additional costs I know of yearly, I'm not sure on how often the well needs to be tested for water, but those expenses being taken on by CCGC and OCPYC. I can answer any questions. I can talk about the technology, but if anyone has something specific I could answer, a concern.
David, since I don't know if everyone on the board knows you, maybe you could just say something briefly about your background.
David Delvecchio, let's see. I've been working with Chris Carter, who's in the front row, doing solar work on and off grid since 98, 99, anyway. Been around the technology a while, dropped a few pumps, and I shouldn't say dropped, lowered a few pumps into some wells. I'm also one of the, I guess, three in the state who's certified PV installer by, the mouthful is, the North American Board of Certified Energy Practitioners. Just a rigorous test that we have to take. There's three of us that are in the state that have this qualification. Actually, Chris and I are two of them. So I'm pretty qualified to speak on solar ad nauseum.
David, maybe you can answer this for me. The well house can be locked. Can the well pump itself be locked so that when folks from the community garden are not present, it's not in use?
The pump lives down the well shaft. Mm-hmm. And up above, all that will be there will be plumbing that comes up and out, and then it dives down underground and goes over to the community garden. There will be a small electric box in there as well. Basically, you know, it's a small thing like that. The well house could be secure. I mean, there are people who are part of the team who are skilled carpenters that could build a lock and a system that kind of made it pretty hard to get into. And basically, you know, if anyone wants to break in anything they can, it's basically to try to keep the folks that are just kind of bored out. That one little unit that was accessible, which is, I guess it'd be hard to do a lot of damage. They'd need a lot of tools, plumbing tools, electrical tools, to kind of get in there and cause a mess. And if they do, then we have to come back and fix it because we're the ones that need the water, or the garden needs the water, and they'll be calling me. Dave,
so it's,
you know,
not an open spigot. It wouldn't necessarily.
No, okay. No. It would be pumped directly underground and then come up into a cistern, and from there, there are some methods that have been discussed to keep anyone from just accessing that water. Whether that's lockable at that point as well hasn't been completely planned out, but so I can't say exactly what it would look like, but know
it's
that
doable.
It's, yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Dave.
Okay.
Sammy, did you want to come up?
Yeah, thanks. Sorry, for I know y'all are super busy tonight and have a lot to do, and but there is an urgency in this, in that the well could potentially be filled before the next meeting. So this is why we really would like for it to be considered. If a decision can't be made today, ideally we could. The Parrish brothers have expressed the possibility, if the town approaches them, of postponing the filling of the well contingent on an amendment on the contract. So if a decision is unable to be done today, that would be a solution. And the well isn't filled yet with cement, so there's still a chance to save this resource. And as you all have seen, it's brought out a lot of energy from the community and knowledge. And that's one of the values of this. The community garden is not just going to be growing food. It's going to be sharing information. People's passion are coming out and sharing knowledge, and we have a lot of qualified people here. Anyway, of those people who have donated some of their time is the UNC School of Public Health Microbiology Department, and they tested for E. coli and coliforms and just got the results back from them. Considering that the well hasn't been treated for who knows how long, at least 2 years, it's really impressive how this well is. What they wrote back in their gibberish is 0.1 CFU per 100 milliliter. So basically one E. coli colony was found in the 0.93 liter sample. So E. coli per se isn't the bad thing. It's E. coli is usually around when there are other bad things. So what it implies is that it would be worth consulting with someone who really knows these numbers and to see if it actually has to be tested as periodically as would be required so that the town and the CCGC don't have a liability concern, which is one of the main concerns of the town. I don't know if this thing has internet, but I could bring it up so that everyone else could see the notes that you guys have about, like, some of the answers to some of these concerns. But, oh, no.
You could probably put it on the overhead if you...
Oh, yeah.
Or could this be...
Drew.
Yeah.
Why don't you just put that on the overhead?
Yeah. You probably want to...
He's got it right there.
Yeah, we can also... Mark, can this be put on...
What's that?
So you probably don't want to mention that because staff's got their presentation.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, I didn't agree with that.
Yeah,
is that working for you?
Just decide.
Yeah, I guess that will work. I shouldn't touch it. But, yeah, that's basically... These are answers to... this is all on a wiki information that we at the Community Garden has been compiling as a collective, which is another example of how this is a great thing for the town. I mean, we're collaborating with each other. It's another reason for the Community Garden. But addressing some of the town's concerns, the town basically was worried about having to pay for the well abandonment, and currently the Parrish brothers are assuming all those costs. So a solution to that would be to discuss postponement as these 2 points. I'm not going to read it all. People can read it if they'd like. Water quality concerns, we've already addressed a few of those. But we have many other answers for mitigating the chance of a possibility of consumption by the public. So they're listed right there, 3 main points. And then another concern was vandalism. And, you know, we're buying the equipment, and we can protect the well house just as we're protecting the shed for the equipment that we have in there. So we're willing to take that responsibility. And then Randy had expressed the lead casing, whether that was a problem. We consulted with various well experts, and they said that they don't really know of any well casement. They haven't run across that, but we're willing to test the well anyway for hard metals. There's a place in Asheville that will do that. And so the current status is that the Parrish Brothers are expected to fill it in by mid-June. Their contract ends in July, so even within the contract window that they have, there's a chance for postponing until further study. And then the well specs were given by Dave Delvecchio. And then there are many reasons for the well. I mean, it provides on-site water, and combined with the catchment, it provides enough for what we need at the garden. It's already existing on the town property to be a waste to get rid of something that would cost normally at least $2,100 to drill. And then it's encouraged all this community input. And then it also mitigates energy issues, and there are many of them, one being consequent global warming. A new study just came out showing that the east coast of the U.S. in 2050 will be undergoing a lot of drought. And that's from Florida to D.C. And so, you know, alternative sources of water is very important. And then there are a few other reasons why for keeping the well. And then there's our plan for using the well pump. And then equipment and cost. So I just wanted to share that with you all and hope that we could do something about this. And thank you very much.
If I may make a suggestion about how to proceed with this, when is our next business meeting?
June 19th.
And it's a pretty full agenda on the 19th, probably. Well, notwithstanding that, I want to suggest that, that we... look into holding off on one way or another and making a decision about this until June 19th so that this can be a matter that's on a regularly scheduled agenda to give, I know a lot of sort of proponents of the community garden are here tonight, and proponents of the well are here tonight, other folks who may have interests or concerns about this matter are, haven't really been given any advance notice that we would be looking at this issue tonight. And I know the board, by and large, only had a little bit of notice that we would be looking at this issue tonight. So I want to suggest that we hold off on this issue until our next business meeting. And if the staff has anything new that they would like to add to this discussion, that we ask them to report back on any new issues that might have arisen between now and the 19th, and also suggest it's been sort of intimated or suggested by one of the presentations that. We might be able to rearrange our contract with the contractor in such a way that they would cap the well at some later date. Maybe if the staff could report back to us on the sort of actual feasibility of that following some discussion with formal discussion between the contractor and us as the other party of that contract.
It seems like also part of that should be that if the contract with Parrish is through sometime in July, that the well capping should be asked them to put that later in that period so that our discussion on the 19th doesn't become moot.
Right.
To ensure that they'll do it later.
I think I said that, or I meant to say that as a part of the beginning of that.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah,
I understood it that way.
Okay,
great.
So... would that be acceptable to the board to have that as a matter that we would take up on the 19th?
Sure. Just with the quest, just to check though with Steve, do any of these issues give you heartburn in terms of working with the contract under the terms that we have?
Well, in terms of the contractor, no, because the reality is he has every incentive not to fill it because it reduces his cost. He's going to get the house regardless of the less work he does. The better it is for him.
Okay. Well, I think the staff's given us some comments in the past on this subject, and you can recirculate those and or add to them. Joel?
No, and either the proponents or staff, whichever one can get them to me first. I'd like the information on how other community gardens provide water to their community gardens. Is there a standard? I'd like to know, because I'm going to look at the more of the public health issues, what the county requires for wells. I think that would be helpful. I think that'll be all for now. If I have any additional ones, I'll certainly email the board and staff.
Thanks, Joel.
And I also wanted to have a follow-up on the any further testing that you that is going to take place.
Okay. I don't think we need a formal motion on that. If that's acceptable to the board, then that's how we'll deal with that. I have a couple of other people who are signed up to speak on the fire station and on the town commons reservation process. I'm going to call on the folks about the town commons reservation process when we get to the budget discussion as a part of that agenda item. Is there anybody here who's in the fire station on the fire station report? Is there anybody here to speak on any items besides those? Okay. If not, let's turn to the consent agenda, Mr. Manager.
Okay. Item one is approval of the minutes of the previous meetings of May 15th and May 22nd. Item two is a request to adopt a budget ordinance reflecting the current status of loans in reserve for the revolving loan fund. Item three is a request to amend the town code to allow samples of beer and wine to be given away at the farmer's market. Item four is award of the contract for audit firm. Item five is a town code amendment revising the privilege license fees and resolution to adopt revised privilege license fees. Item six is a request to issue permits for the annual four on the fourth road race, Carborough 10K road race, and the Gallop and Gorge 8K road race. Item seven is a town code amendment establishing a greenways commission. If I could point out, you have it in your place and were emailed a slightly revised amendment which would increase the commission membership from 11 to 13 members, which would add a seat for the Friends of Bowling Creek and one additional seat for neighborhood representatives. Item 8 is a request to set a public hearing on an ordinance amending the Carborough Land Use Ordinance provisions dealing with stormwater management. Item 9 is an interlocal cooperation agreement for federal transportation planning grants. Item 10 is a resolution approving the financing of vehicles and equipment. Item 11, a request to approve a budget amendment. Item 12 is a request to set a public hearing on the conditional use permit request for the Ballantyne Architecturally Integrated Subdivision. And item 13 is a request to set a public hearing on Phase A of 300 East Main Street conditional use permit.
The items.
Second, but I have a question.
That's with the revised number 7,
yeah.
I'm assuming. Okay.
But I have a question about number 3.
Go ahead.
So that I can be clear, who, I'm not opposed to it. Like a little wine myself every now and then.
On Saturday morning?
Not on Saturday morning, no. Always after 5. Will this ordinance work with the ABC regulations or?
Yes,
okay.
the vendor's required to have all of the appropriate permits from the ABC commission.
Okay, that's
Mark,
it.
Mark, I have a clarification on item 7.
Go ahead.
On the Greenway Commission, the configuration. It's, Jackie and I were under the impression that the Greenway Summit work group folks would be able to roll over into the commission. And the and actually, we just need that clarified because it's not clear.
The resolution is only establishing the commission. It's not actually appointing anybody to it.
Okay, so.
So I think it would just be. I'm assuming that that's what the board
okay.
is going to do when.
But, you get there.
But
okay.
It would be good to have them fill out, even if in brief, a formal application
right.
for the board.
Okay.
And we're planning to bring that back June 19th, Sarah. Is that right?
June 19th, that's what I wanted. Okay.
So that I can just be clear, are you saying they automatically will be put on the board, or
they
if there's someone else that wants to be on there, then they'd have to wait, I guess, for the staggered terms?
I'm saying we're going to vote on that when we actually, I mean, right. Essentially that when we actually make the appointments, we'll make that decision. That's one possibility. Right. But we're not binding ourselves to that tonight.
And we can make room right. for pretty much anybody that wants to be on it.
Right. Okay. But I'd just like to be heard.
You never know. 13 sounds like plenty, so hopefully.
Yeah.
Well, and some of those people may be, you know, it may be the same
maybe,
seats.
Yeah.
Right. So, right.
Okay. So okay. We'll just plan on sorting that out when we actually make appointments to this this board, if that's all right. All right. Then it's been moved and seconded for the consent agenda with revised number 7. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously. Mr. Manager, item D1, an update on the fire station.
All right. The purpose of this item is to update the Board of Aldermen on fire station number 2. We have Ken Newell with Cooper, or Stuart Cooper Newell here to give the board an update along with Chief Crabtree.
Good evening. Thank you for having us tonight. We certainly appreciate you allowing us to be here. My name is Ken Newell, Stuart Cooper Newell Architects. We certainly also appreciate the opportunity to work with the town of Carrboro on this very important and exciting project. So thank you again for having us tonight. Several things that I wanted to go over with you, which specifically was to update you on the status of the project as it stands now. And the first of which I believe that the chief has just handed out to you, which is the written program of the facility itself. Just to give you a brief description, this written program was developed over a series of months with several meetings with the fire department staff and the folks who would be using the facility. As you can see at the top of this program, there are several revision dates. It was actually developed in one approximately 3-hour meeting and then revised 4 different times after that. The purpose of the revisions is really to make sure that they were receiving the facility, that at least the program of the facility they were looking to receive, and also a very honest attempt to get the budget and the size of the facility down to something that would be a little more palatable to the town budget as we move forward. Just, I don't want to go through the entirety of the program, but if you would notice at the bottom of the first page or near the bottom of the first page, the vehicle bay areas in gray are broken down into about 3,470 square feet. At the middle of the second page, you've got public areas broken down into about 1,234 square feet. And then at the bottom of the second page, private space is broken down into about 2,241 square feet. The real meat, as far as you're probably are interested, is on the back page, which talks about the total size of the building and anticipated projected construction cost of such. As you'll see at the second gray line from the top, the total gross size of the facility, 8,946 square feet. This is obviously before the first line is drawn on paper as far as floor plans are concerned, but it's a pretty accurate number based on rules of thumb and our experience on fire stations. So you're basically looking at a program requested needs of about 9,000 square feet for the facility. Now, we have taken that and broken it into 3 separate projected cost areas. The first of which you see is a projected base construction cost considering a 1-story pre-engineered building with sloping roof construction. That square footage at the projected construction cost, as you see there, yields the 2.066 construction cost, and then as you see, by the time you add furniture, fixtures, equipment, and other soft costs to that, the first number you see in red there, $2.545 million anticipated project cost for the project with that option. The second option is a 1-story conventional construction, not 1-story pre-engineered, but 1-story conventional construction. Same size building, obviously, but with a higher cost per square foot. And you see that with the same also soft cost anticipated with that, that takes the anticipated projected construction cost up to $3.064 million. By the way, feel free to interrupt me as we go forward. I'm don't mind at all the interruptions.
Well, since you said that.
Yes, ma'am.
What's the difference, if you explain, what's the difference between pre-engineered and conventional construction?
Yes, ma'am. The difference in what we have seen in our experience in fire station design is there's two major construction types you would expect to find in fire station design. Conventional construction basically means normal foundations, brick and block walls going up, wood or steel trusses at the top, and then the normal wall finishes and construction convention. The difference in pre-engineered would be is that you've seen them before. It is a large super frame. So you pour a slab on grade and you put this large frame that typically spans from the front of the building to the back, and then everything else about the facility would be conventional construction, exterior walls, interior walls, roof structures, things of that nature. So the difference really is that large frame that goes up at one time.
And that frame's metal? Or
that's right. That's okay. Correct. That frame would be metal. A lot of people have a negative indication when they hear the word pre-engineered because they think of some ugly automotive shop somewhere with metal siding or something of that nature, and that's not what we're talking about.
Sort of like modular housing.
Some people would look at that as a negative. Yes, ma'am. That's correct.
Okay.
So can you, or maybe when you get through the third, will you explain the benefits or problems with each of those three?
I'll be glad to. Yes, sir. And actually, now's a good time to do that. Let's go ahead and do that because the third category is actually going to a multi-story building. And I've actually brought a couple of example slides of pre-engineered versus conventional construction. I hesitate to show them because I don't want anybody to think this is what's being proposed for Carrboro. These are totally different projects, totally different designs, but just to give you an idea of what the project could look like under that. This is a project in Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. They are actually are committed to building one of these about every 18 to 24 months. It is a substation, much like your own. A little bit larger in the square feet, and so it is a fairly attractive facility as far as they're concerned. They've got very strict guidelines in terms of requirements and design review boards there. This is a pre-engineered structure, okay? So, again, you'll notice that it doesn't look like what I referred to a moment ago, the automatic motive shop down the road. So that is an example of what we would have in mind when we're thinking about pre-engineered structures. This is one just completed at Kitty Hawk, right on the coast, and so the vernacular is obviously coastal. But this is a conventional construction project. So really, if designed and built correctly, the only time that you notice the difference between pre-engineered and conventional is when you walk into the vehicle bays and you look overhead at the structure, and you just see those large frames spanning from front to back. So that's typically the difference. In terms of longevity, in terms of anything else, there's really no difference between the two. There are a little bit tighter constraints in the projects. For instance, you'll notice here you've got a building that has basically three shapes to it, okay, three components in massing to it, whereas here you've got a building that's got multiple components in massing as well. So that being said, there are ways to accommodate what you're trying to do. The big difference, as you see in the red figures in front of you, is the cost of construction. You typically lose somewhere around 20 to 25% in construction costs by going pre-engineered. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Is there a difference in terms of heating and cooling?
No, sir. Every other performance aspect or longevity or durability of the building is expected to be the same. Any public safety facility, particularly fire stations, you expect to be a 50 to 75 year building.
And so it's primarily an aesthetic distinction is how you would evaluate that.
Most people would not recognize this as an aesthetic. It's mostly a structural difference between the two, how the building is being held up, the skeleton of the building.
Right, but in terms of the impact on the use of the building or on the public who are perceiving the building in
correct.
The environment.
Correct.
That would be an aesthetic.
Correct. I hate to use a brand name, but a lot of people think of a pre-engineered frame as a Butler building, mm-hmm. and when that word is used again, it sometimes has negative connotations as well.
Okay. And so the two-story would be the same along the same lines as this, but just going up a story.
That is correct. And to the third category, thank you for leading to that, the third category is if you did go multi-story with the facility, then that takes you away from the pre-engineered construction type because you lose most or all of the savings you would experience through pre-engineered by going multi-storied with that type of construction. So, therefore, you see the cost there goes up to the same as the conventional construction at $289 a square foot. You'll notice there that the size of the building has grown. from 8,900 square feet to about 10.1. The reason of that is when you go multi-story, you've got additional space necessary for elevators, stairways, basically vertical circulation that you need to get up and down in the building with. So that's the difference that you see there between Category 1, I'm sorry, between Category 2 and Category 3. Okay?
Can I follow up on that?
Yes.
Is there a difference, or is there any analysis of whether there's a difference in terms of the work experience of the firefighters, in terms of, like, separation from the private space and the workspace between the two-story or the one-story configuration?
Typically not, particularly on compact floor plans like we have here, about 8,000, 9,000 square feet. When you have a multi-story building, obviously the vehicles are going to consume most of the footprint of the lower floor, and then that leaves some support spaces, sometimes some office spaces, and then normally the private spaces then go on the upper floors, sleep rooms, day rooms, kitchens, things of that nature. So whether you go one-story or multi-story, you always on a fire station try to zone the different areas of the building so that you don't have an interference between one zone and the next.
Travis, do you have any comment on that question in terms of the one versus the two for the?
All of the stations that I've previously worked at were all one story.
Uh-huh.
It seems to be the trend, and it's mainly driven by cost.
Okay, thanks.
So what you see here are the three numbers projected for the cost of the station, assuming that one of the constraints is the written program that's been developed with the staff in place. So. That's the first thing I wanted to go over with you was the written program and cost estimate for that. Secondly, thing I wanted to mention to you is basically regarding the design charrette that was held on May 21st here in town. And at the last board meeting that we were present at in May 1st, the agenda for that charrette was presented to you, and opportunity for any comments or suggestions or modifications that needed to be made to that. And so that agenda as presented to you was what was presented at the design charrette on May 21st. All of the topics that are on that agenda that was presented to you were discussed at the charrette on the 21st, and no attendees stayed afterwards to discuss these or other topics after all of the discussion took place at the design charrette. I also want to go over with you some of the minutes from the actual design charrette itself. We did, as the agenda described, we did talk about the designer's experience and qualifications. We went over the description of the pre-planning process, which is basically what I've just described to you in the last 10 minutes. We talked about the review of the written program, again, the program that I just went over with you a moment ago. We talked about LEED, or sustainable design. We talked about what it meant. The LEED consultant was at the charrette, so we talked about his input, his involvement, his experience, what he would be involved in, and particularly what LEED would mean to your project. Because at the May 1st board meeting, there was a clear preference stated that you would like to approach or pursue LEED certification for the building itself. And so we certainly had that in place and discussed that at the charrette. One of the important decisions or comments that came out of the charrette presented with the scenario choice in that designing a sustainable building with LEED, using the elements of LEED to gain that certification, to the cost of somewhere between $40,000 and $60,000 would be necessary to register, to document, and to receive LEED certification. In other words, you can design a sustainable design based on the LEED requirements, but in order to get that piece of paper, that actual certification itself, it would require additional design and additional certification and application processes that normally would result somewhere in a project this size of between $40,000 and $60,000. The participants that were at the charrette preferred that the $40,000 to $60,000 be spent for additional sustainable design elements, so that you would get more elements in the design of the building than what it would take actually to get that level of LEED certification. So that was pretty clearly stated by the participants at the presentation. The next area that was discussed in the presentation, again, according to the agenda, was the presentation of the site constraints and the opportunities that existed for the site itself. This is actually a survey of the site, and so I'll use it to point to several of the things that we pointed out. Most of the constraints that I'm going to talk to you about and show you were pointed out. Some of them have come to light actually since the charrette, so I'll point those out as well. There was a conversation regarding, and you see a large circle here. That represents a 32-inch holly that is right on the front of the site. There's a lot of conversation about the challenges to preserve that holly. Some of the challenges that were outlined in how things that would be necessary to try to preserve that holly is that the tree itself is actually, as you can see, just about in the center of the front portion of the site. And this is a comparatively small site for a fire station project, by the way, about a total of 1.756 acres. Any significant grading necessary to accommodate the building, the driveways, and et cetera, would likely negatively impact the viability of that tree because of its location in the center of the property, as you see it there. Any significant grading necessary would, as I said, would likely negatively impact the sustainability of the tree. The tree is within the current setback requirements. You'll see on this plan, the dotted lines, the dashed lines that you see around, are the building setback lines per the town requirements. And then there's one additional setback 10 feet further, which creates 50 feet setback, which is a DOT buffer or setback required. And so you can see that the tree exists within those setbacks. And so that is a challenge within itself as well. The location of any driveways, whether it's single driveways or multiple driveways, may prove to interfere with the tree's location. The proximity of the tree to Homestead Road, as you can see, if from the property line here is 40 and 50 feet and we're this close to the road, we're very close to Homestead Road with that 32-inch tree. So the proximity of the tree with its canopy size, it will create a safety hazard to traffic. Coming emergency traffic going and coming from the fire station on emergency calls, and thus traffic that is traveling the road itself. So that's just one of the several constraints or challenges that we would face in that. A couple of the participants, after seeing and hearing the constraints that are there, a couple of the participants felt that it was necessary to save the holly tree at almost any cost. And some of those costs are things that needed to be looked at according to participants. I'll go through the list of those. One of which is the possibility of committing to a potentially more expensive grading plan that would leave the area around the holly tree undisturbed with the hopes that there would be little viability problems or challenges created for the tree in grading. Another option that was mentioned was for the town granting itself variances, if necessary, to shift the developed portions of the site further away. For instance, you've got a 20-foot setback at the rear. If the variance was granted that you could encroach upon that 20-foot setback with development, just so that in the hopes of pushing further away from that tree and hopefully not disturbing it as much as possible. Another thing that was mentioned by the participants was the construction type, modifying the construction type and increasing the construction cost by building a multi-story station that would result in a smaller footprint and thus avoiding the tree. That was option 3 on the program I just presented you just a moment ago. Another idea that was brought up was trying to pressure the DOT into allowing two driveways in and out of the site instead of one, which would hopefully decrease the amount of paving on the actual surface of the property itself and hopefully providing some additional opportunities for the tree. Regarding the safety hazard issue presented by the tree limiting site visibility for emergency vehicles entering Homestead Road, the only suggested remedy really from the participants was to pressure the DOT into providing signalization in conjunction with the intersection that would be created leaving the site so that as an emergency call came, the lights would signal themselves and hopefully stop traffic and decreasing the possibility of having some sort of an accident associated with that. Yes, ma'am.
Randy and I were just saying, gee, that needs to happen anyway. Does that happen, Travis?
No, ma'am. Normally it does not. It's very difficult to get those signals put in. The height issues for the lights, the visibility, depending on where the station sits with respect to the traffic patterns, is very difficult. And many times DOT does not favor those style of lights either.
Because given the traffic and the
high school drivers.
And the high school, and that there's going to be ever increasing traffic on Homestead Road, we don't exactly rule DOT, but I think that is a good idea, regardless of the tree, for us to try and get that done.
It would be a great benefit, and due to the number of stations we work on at any given time, that is a desire that most people would have, obvious reasons. But the signalization involving a red light, green light, yellow light situation are, in our experience, extremely difficult and very rare to get implemented by a DOT, and even the yellow signs with the flashing lights on them is even difficult to achieve many times.
Well, I think anything you want from DOT does not come easily, but that doesn't mean that you don't, work towards it.
Yes, ma'am. I agree.
But if it's emergency triggered, it would make perfect sense given an area where there's a lot of movement and potential congestion.
Right. Another thing that came up and was pointed out during the charrette is that besides the 32-inch holly, there are other significant trees on site. Most of them, as you can see, occurring in the south end of the site, which is going to be a challenge because that is also the widest part of the site as well. So there was the obvious interest in preserving as much of the natural vegetation on the site as could be preserved. One of the other things that constraints about the site is the actual grades themselves. From the uppermost point, and each one of these lines representing 1 foot of topography, from the uppermost point to the lowest point on the site, there's approximately 18 feet of vertical difference from the high point to the low point. So it slopes a lot in a very short span of time. This grade difference is fairly significant on, again, a relatively small site, considering a 9,000-square-foot building pad along with the parking, the oversized vehicle driveways necessary to accommodate, the significant amount of grading that would be expecting. So it's a real challenge. However, a few of the participants expressed their desire that the existing topography be preserved as much as possible and offered some of the following methods of doing that. Number one was, again, constructing a multi-story building to help eliminate as much impact to the footprint of the site as possible. Number two, constructing a multi-leveled building, not multi-storied, but multi-leveled, so that the building steps along with the topography as you move down some of that topography on the site. And one other idea was to build significant portions of the facility underground or buried partially within the ground to help eliminate some of the impact to the topography itself. We then went to the discussion for the layout of the floor plan, and I described to them, as I slightly did for you just shortly ago, that a fire station typically is divided into three major categories of spaces: public spaces, private spaces, and vehicle and apparatus support spaces. And so that was described in how you lay those out. We went further into a discussion for the layout, possible layout of a floor plan on the site, not showing how your floor plan would impact the site, but talking about those three areas. And the result of that is most participants at the charrette agreed that the vehicle bays should front to Homestead Road. And the comment clearly made that there was no need or desire to disguise the fire station in this location, is to clearly show it that it is a fire station and the vehicles do front onto the street itself. Most of the discussion for the night actually went to the exterior appearance, discussion for exterior appearance of the fire station. And there was a lot of convergent and conversation opinions on the issue of exterior appearance. For instance, we showed, just as examples to give different ideas of different flavors, seven different stations that had previously been done, just to give an idea of some historical, some more modern, some with different types of materials, just to elicit some response back from the participants. The participants agreed or expressed their view that there really is no architectural vernacular existing in the neighborhood that warranted adherence by the new station. Several participants expressed the preference that the sustainable design elements of the building, LEED certification or however sustainable, that they be expressed visually in the exterior design of the building. Some of the participants expressed a preference for a more modern or contemporary appearance. Some of the participants expressed a preference for a more historic appearance. One participant that could not be there that night but sent a letter the day in advance expressed the desire that the exterior building standards that have been adopted by Winmore Development across the street be used for the exterior requirements of the building. Several examples, again, of pre-engineered stations were presented to show, as I've shown you, that pre-engineered aspect of the structure does not have to have a negative impact on the visual appearance of the structure itself. However, as I've mentioned, several of the participants keyed off of the word pre-engineered and were not happy about that being a possibility for the design of the station. As we discussed. The charrette itself ended at approximately 9:45 after starting at 7 o'clock, and none of the participants stuck around to discuss further issues or bring up any issues that were not covered in the charrette itself. Most of you, I think all of you, received an email from one of the participants in which you have also seen my response to the email, because there were a few things listed in the email that I thought needed to be responded to. And just to not go over each of those, but just to highlight some of those, we went over a few of the constraints of the project. And again, some of the constraints were the written program, the projected construction cost estimate. Another of the major constraints on a fire station is fire station design standards, things like vehicle turning radii for these large pieces of equipment, driveway widths and slopes that are acceptable for vehicles of this size and weight to encounter, emergency vehicle egress going out on the street and line of sight visibility for emergency vehicles. We went over most of the site constraints that I've given you here, including usable site size. And let me give you one more slide on that. What you see here is the same survey you were just looking at, but after you take the 9,000 square feet of space of the actual building, the anticipated driveways to accomplish the program, the parking spaces, the sidewalks, things of that nature, you've got within the bounds of developable site, these lines here, based on the setbacks, you've got approximately 40,000 square feet of developable property. Is that a word, developable? Developable property. All of the things I've just mentioned consume about 30,000 square feet. So what you see in the gray area represents a portion of the site, not that it would be exactly there, but represents the portion of the site that has to be developed to accomplish the program needs, as previously stated. Yes, please.
So you're saying on the projection 1 and 2, the tree's gone.
No, I'm saying it, no matter what we do, it's going to be challenging to save the tree, but we never said that it could not be saved, is that it would just be difficult. And with topography, with driveways, with all those things being said, ultimately, and I'll mention here in a moment, ultimately you get down to the safety issue, the line of sight vision, as to if, as the tree stays, will it create any type of safety hazard for the fire department itself. So we hope that we can work with whatever direction you give us to help save the tree, assuming you're willing to accept any tolerances for that tree staying if there are any safety issues associated with it.
But in your professional opinion, I mean, first and foremost is the safety of the people and the citizens of Carborough. And to me, it's not worth to spend $1 million to save a tree, as much as I love trees. And you know, but this is not a park. If it would be a park, it might be a different consideration, but this is a fire station. And has to serve the main purpose is, you know, the folks have to be able to get in there with those big truck engines in and out in a safe way and without endangering anybody else. And it seems to me that, is it possible to move it? Which, well, I don't know. I don't want to raise taxes in $1 million so that we can save a tree.
Right.
Sounds it's a good thing to do, but.
I did address your question in my response, and I'll further give my opinion on that as to how you would like us to approach that. The site, again, the site configuration, besides the actual amount of site that will be consumed, the site configuration itself was a constraint that was shared at the design charrette. For instance, considering the setbacks, what you have along this bottom property line, which is the deepest property line that we have for the site, you've got approximately 167 feet of property line there that can be developed. The depth of the vehicle bays as programmed, along with the aprons at the front and rear, equals 166 feet.
Mm.
Okay? And as you can see, as you go north from this longest point, it gets smaller. Okay? So that's one of the real challenges for that. So, you know, compared to it, our average property depth from 43 feet down to this line is 105 feet. And again, we need 166 minimum for the vehicle bays themselves. So that was one of the challenges that we faced.
Travis, excuse me, how wide are the vehicle bays at, I guess, fire station number one?
The current station that we have now, it's a three-bay station, and it's approximately 40, let's see, about 66 by 66.
Okay.
Did you have a question?
Plus the driveway.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
This had come up a long time ago when folks were first talking about the fire station and kind of pipe dreaming about it. At the Charette, was there any conversation, any recommendation for community space if you went to a two-story
In other
design?
Words, adding some program space to the building if we do go
right,
out.
Right, because I know folks in the,
is in your three different scenarios, the two-story building, maybe you addressed this and I missed
it. The
two-story building is about 1,200 square feet
right,
bigger.
It
exactly.
is because of vertical circulation, elevators and stairways.
Okay. That's not floor space then.
Okay. It's not usable space.
Okay. It's not usable. Because one of the things that folks a long time ago had talked about is potentially having community meeting space in whatever is designed out there. But
nobody mentioned it.
Okay.
The plan was to have, there is a small meeting space in this facility that could be used to accommodate the public. One of the additional constraints is parking.
Right.
As we've known from day one, this site just barely works for a fire station.
Now, we have three people to signed up to speak about this when the gentleman's done. But
we'll, no, I was just going to give just a point of clarification. That the town has been on a long search for a piece of property for a fire station. And I would hazard a guess, and people could correct me because some people have been on the board longer than me, that because of a lot of housing development, there became fewer and fewer places for the town to purchase a site. And those sites were more and more expensive. And we got this site for $1 a year for 99 years from the University of North Carolina. And that the majority of the boards were unwilling to condemn somebody's property to place a fire station. And so when you look at the context of putting a fire station where we have it, there are going to be some limitations. And I wanted everyone to understand that prior to the board discussing it, because some members of the board were not on the board when we had many, many discussions with the previous town manager, with the present town manager, about where are we going to get property for a fire station. Because it's been on the board, it's been a proposal in the capital improvement plan at least since I've been on the board since 1999. And I wanted everybody to have a clear understanding of the environment of which the board is making decisions with regard to this fire station.
Thanks. Let me wrap up the constraints that we've got and that we went over. Obviously, assuming that the fire station will actually fit on the site, it's going to be extremely tight to make that happen. And with its current configurations, it would appear, based on that 166 feet that we need, obviously that means that the vehicle bays themselves are going to have to be as far south as possible. And so that lays out a lot of indications, not to mention the fact that that part of the site is where most of the grading would be necessary to occur and where most of the current vegetation resides on the site. To go to topography, again, there's 18 feet of change, which is the equivalent of 1 1/2 story, building stories, from the top of this site to the bottom of the site. And so in order to grade out the site to make the program facility work, it will require some significant grading to be done to the site. based on the fact that the only possible location is at that southern property line, that means significant grading would be required to meet the current program. And one of the many attempts that we would use as designers to help minimize the cost of the project would be to balance the site. That means to try to equal as much as possible the cut and the fill. And in order to do that on a site like this, it means significant grading would be accomplished as well. The result of the constraints that I've just laid out for you, and as many of which, as I pointed out in the charrette, is that many, even more so on this station project than most other station projects, many of the design decisions will be dictated before the first line is drawn on the paper. There's in order to fulfill the program needs, there's very limited possibilities on this site. Most of the constraints, again, were discussed, and as you can see, just to satisfy those constraints, we require touching a great deal of this site. Let me jump ahead to say that for most public safety fire station projects, an order of priorities is put in place, and some of you have already touched on those already in some of your comments. Those priorities normally that are outlined for a fire station is, number one, is that the facility must function properly as a fire station. Okay? If not, then responses will be affected and lives and property potentially lost. So if you're going to do a fire station, most people would say that's priority one. It must function as a fire station properly. Number two, it must be safe. It is a public safety facility, and so safety is necessary for not only the people there, but for the folks that are interfaced with the site, even at the roadway. Number three, the project must meet the budget and schedule constraints that you may have. So that's always important. And particularly so in this project. And number four, all other priorities, appearances, sustainable design, all those things, other things typically fall behind those first three items, bless you, that you would normally encounter on a project. So that being said, we did present that to the charrette members that were there. We were there was a comment made in the email by the participant that they were disappointed not to sit down with paper and drawing tools during the charrette. Our main purpose in the meeting was to give some very specific, to get some very specific design thoughts and options in light of all the constraints that existed. We did feel that, as I've expressed in the minutes from the charrette, that we got some good direction regarding how the project should be approached and how to move forward with the project, at least their desires and goals. Our lead consultant was there, as I mentioned. He's a registered architect. He's presented for approximately 10 minutes regarding his qualifications, lead description, how lead would affect this project. He opened the floor to any questions that anyone might have regarding sustainable design. He also interjected a lot of ideas and issues during the rest of the charrette, and there were no participants who approached him at the end of the charrette asking for any additional information about lead or his qualifications. A great deal of the conversation, again, had been placed around the trees, particularly the 32-inch holly. We never said it was impossible to save the tree. We just outlined, as I have for you, that it was going to be challenging to do that with these program requirements. There were several comments in the email that you received regarding the town's intentions for the design charrette itself. Did you really hope to achieve any ideas, input, and also us as the design team? And I can't speak for you, but I can speak for ourselves, is the design team members at the charrette were there to solicit legitimate public input and opinion, and we feel that we got that, got a lot of opinion, some of it that conflicted with other opinions given, but we got a lot of opinion there. It was not the intention to leave that meeting with the design in hand, but to leave with clear input on what the public wanted to see in the design of a station. One thing I do have to strongly disagree with in the comments in the email was that there was limited opportunity for public input at it. I opened the meeting just as I interjected to you a few moments ago, is that please interrupt us at any point. We'll be glad to have any input. That's the reason we're here. I also stopped specifically 9 times through the course of the charrette and asked for specific public input and opinion. So I feel like there was plenty of opportunity for public input. Yes, ma'am.
I was there. And I'll second what he's saying. There really was opportunity for public input, and there was a fair amount of public input.
Now, with all this being said, and I'm wrapping up, Mayor, so please forgive me for being lengthy. With all this being said, we'll be happy to accommodate any project or constraint modifications that the town wishes to make based on any public opinion or your own opinion. We're not trying, we don't have an agenda trying to accomplish a specific thing except providing you a functional, good fire station within your budget constraints. So I'll be glad to open up for any questions. Yes, ma'am.
Just one question. I don't know if anybody now has the answer to it, but I'd like to get the answer to it. I know it's difficult to move trees. I also think it's possible to move trees, Kathy?
It's possible,
but
not advisable.
But not advisable.
That one's too big.
Then I withdraw my question. Thank you.
I do have a couple of things, and what I presented to you is leads to a few pieces of direction that we need in order to move forward. Okay, so I've got about three of those, so let me ask those of you. And first of all, I'll reiterate, we're willing to do whatever you want us to do, just understanding that there's design cost associated with modifications, and if there's delay to the project, there's construction cost associated with it. We receive bids on fire stations approximately every 4 weeks. So that being said, we're able to track those costs pretty closely. That being said, we anticipate right now that for every month of delay, there's about a 1% increase in construction cost. That's a minimum of at least $20,000 per month for every month of delay that takes place. So the questions. We need direction on your budget choice. There were three options put in front of you at the end of that written program. If any of those three are satisfactory, we need to know which one of the three is satisfactory or how you'd like to proceed.
Most economic one.
Well, which of those three?
Okay. Yes. Number two is, does the town, it was suggested at the end of the last charrette that there be other charrettes, some in the evening like we had, and some suggestions of all-day charrettes on the site with fire trucks turning on the site, just to see what kind of impact there would be to that. So if you desire to have more design charrettes, we obviously need to know that as well. And again, that I'm not here to scare you or anything else, but there are obviously cost and time delays associated with that as well. Okay. Third thing is, does the town want to go by the recommendation of the participants, which is instead of using $40,000 to $60,000 for certifying the building as LEED certified, to use those funds to actually implement more sustainable design elements in the facility itself. So those are the three specific things.
All right. So, board members, let me suggest that before we get into any of those three questions that we hear from the three folks who signed up to speak on this topic, if that's acceptable.
See.
Ken Moore and then Kathy Buck. Or
Kathy's going to go first.
Kathy Buck and then Ken Moore.
It might be great if you can leave that image of the site up, please.
Since I was the author of the email that was referred to by Mr. Newell, I wanted to say that I don't think we were exactly at the same meeting, in my opinion. And the reason I'm saying that is a large percentage of the meeting was spent talking about the qualifications of Mr. Newell, the LEEDs people, and everything else. I have been involved in a lot of charrettes. I've led charrettes. And if you're using the term charrettes, I think it means somebody going in to actually having design input by the public. If it's an informational meeting where they're talking about the information, it should be billed as an informational meeting. So, number one, it was not like any charrette I've ever been involved with. Number two, when we got to the point where these slides were not in the PowerPoint. So there were no maps to really refer to. There were some maps that he put up on the wall. We had no handouts. The constraints were sort of run through, so you didn't even really get an idea. We had a much more thorough explanation of the constraints at this meeting than we did at that meeting. We also had a much more thorough explanation of the program at this meeting than we had at that meeting. So there are two things that I found did not allow what I called a room for public input. Yes, there were times when he stopped and said, "Do you have any questions?" That was not, it was not what I felt at the meat of the presentation. Jackie, you were there, but you left before we even got into these issues. He started out the same way about talking about the tree being all of those hazards. But nowhere did I feel like there was we're going to look at the site in lots of different ways. We're going to see, you know, if we can work it in. I'm fine if it comes down to the bottom line that the tree has to go. But I want to be absolutely sure that all of the ways that you could design on that site were really looked at. I also feel that the pre-engineered building versus the, you know, on-site cost, there could be a, part of it pre-engineered and part of it built on-site, depending on it. It doesn't have to be all of one or all of the other. I also feel like this is an important building for the town of Carrboro. I understand all the history of the site, and I really appreciate that. But I think we need to do it really right. And it's going to be there for a long time. And, you know, costs are important, but they shouldn't be the only driving factor to get a good building. I mean, all of it has to be weighed. So I was very disappointed in what I felt was not a willingness from the design team to really engage with the public. It was more like, we're presenting you these things, just like they presented tonight, and do you have any questions? Yes, there were 7 people at that presentation. That's not a whole lot of people. You know, so a lot of this public input was from 7 folks. 2 of us have design backgrounds, so Shostek and myself. And, you know, we could have been talking about it. But by the time we got to the end of the meeting, when these things were presented, it was halfway through the meeting by the time we got there. And there were, you know, there was a slide shown with a fire station, one, you know, that had been plopped from another place onto this side to give us a scale of what was going on. Well, it's a misrepresentation. I mean, you know, I think that we were more sophisticated than that, and that there were people there that understood those issues, and they could have had more of a dialogue, and I don't think the dialogue was there. So this is my feeling about it. I would like, you know, I really think that the tree is important. I would like to see the best effort made working around it. If it has to go, fine, but I want to make sure that everything has been done to make sure that there's been no stone left unturned, that tree has to be taken down. So that's, yeah. So those are my comments from somebody who participated in the charrette and, you know, and have a quite a different viewpoint than the presenter. And are there any questions to me?
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for your honest feedback and your leadership on this. Why do we need to save the tree? And also, it's going to be really expensive and to design around the tree, basically because of, look at the shape of the site. Don't you think we can, I prefer to replant new trees, maybe new holly trees, so, you know, it would be less expensive, or is it something that I don't know that we really need to, is this tree worth $1 million?
Well, it depends on what you say, you know, I mean, if you put it in that term and, you know, yeah, it's probably worth $3 million. You're never going to buy another one of these. It's a 200-year-old tree. Who puts a price on that? So, you know, so if you're talking about dollars and cents, I mean, you know, yeah, you can just say, what's it worth? To me, it's probably worth $3 or $4 million. What's it worth to the town? You know, that has to be a decision you all have to make. My only wish is that when you're weighing all these things, that only the dollar signs are not the only thing driving it. Because I think that's, you know.
You know, Kathy, I'm glad you brought up the idea of creating a configuration that might have some modular parts and some, you know, on-site construction parts. Because when I looked at this, I was thinking the very same thing, that the pre-engineered could be on, since each photo that we saw had different sections. So that's something I'm wondering if we would look at and explore. And Ken, you might want to answer that. But thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kathy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it kind of sounds like the real limiting factor. I mean, obviously cost is an issue, but the real limiting factors are the placement of the vehicle bays and the sight lines. Right. And that's really what's going to tell the tale. You can either get out of there safely or you can't. Mm-hmm. And the trucks are, you got to design around the trucks. And that's, I think that's the big limiting factor. And that's a, that's a tough piece of dirt to work with.
Okay. Just real quickly, one of the questions that we're supposed to be answering tonight is whether or not we want to have another community meeting. And it sounds like if people have design ideas that they feel were not expressed, that may be something we really need to explore. Do you think that would be beneficial?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think that you know, it would depend on how many people that came out. It would depend, you know, there's a lot of information like that. I mean, I think that it would have satisfied me more if we could have sat down with the architects, with the sizes of the trucks, which you could do with little cutouts. You don't need to have...
Which is what a charrette is supposed to be.
Is supposed to be, and you put them on the site and said, we needed to have this much for this. It would have made it very understandable to everybody who was there. But without that, you know, without the actual putting these things on the property and pushing them around, you know, yeah, I might have come to the conclusion this tree had to go, too. But without that, you know, I'm finding that, you know, I'm not trusting the whole process.
Okay. Thanks, Kathy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Kathy.
Ken Moore and then Barbara Jean.
Well, let's see, this big holly tree, 200-year-old holly tree. I'm sorry, Francis Shetley is... do I need to announce myself?
No, we know you.
But let me say this first of all. I do appreciate, I thank the town of Chapel Hill, whoever gave the directive, the Public Works, has gone out there. They
Carver.
Have put...
Carver.
I mean, Carver.
Carver.
Thank you.
Carver.
I can't. All right, so this is too close to Chapel Hill. The Carborough Public Works went out there, I guess, in the last week, and they have put some of that orange fencing around the one tree, the big tree, the poster child, as well as across the entrance so other vehicles can't just drive onto Carborough's site. I am curious how many of y'all have actually been out there and walked on that site. You all know that, as I said, I was sorry Frances Shetley had to leave. She was here supporting. She's much more of an old-timer than I am. I've only been here since 62. I've been driving by that tree for some 30 years and watching it. I am not supporting that the town paid millions of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars to protect that tree. What I am urging is that we be creative. That site has, it's challenging. First of all, have all of you seen the tree? Have you all been out there? So you don't need a photograph on that.
But you can show it for the people.
Put it on the overhead.
Some people actually watch it.
For our viewing audience.
No, well, I can't. If you want to project it, that's fine. So I don't want to. Well, then we do it this way.
There you go.
Oh, okay. All right.
Knock down the flag.
All right. So it takes probably three people to hug that tree. A 200-year-old tree, it's heritage. The other thing, and we'll put this on here. Wonderful.
here's the poster child tree on the edge of the road, as he's described. Here's another. This is not a 200-year-old holly tree, but it's a significant holly tree, right up nestled with a big cedar tree. Just two common Carrboro, North Carolina trees. Again, on the site. Here are pictures of that, if you want to see. They're worthwhile. Carrboro, you do have a cheap site. You're lucky, and I appreciate that. It looks like what's now. Where, how do I get back to this? I'm used to walking around on the land. I don't do all the buttons, so. Great. All right. Those two big trees were right here. There are also some other significant trees are actually on the perimeter, so I think there's no problem with saving them. When I first, and Kathy and I went out there before the so-called charrette, and walked the site some more. We actually, and Chief Travis interacted with him, and I'm in support of everything that we need, the firemen and the safety, the usability of that facility comes first. Kathy and I went actually and visited other fire stations, talked to other firemen. Your question earlier about, well, what do the firemen think? They all have opinions about going upstairs, being close, being, I mean, they all have, I mean, it should be, the firemen should certainly have their input, and I'm assuming they are. I'm disappointed in Carrboro for this reason. I've been around, I love Carrboro, I've done a lot of volunteer work. I, you know, will support Carrboro just forever. More than a year ago, I started voicing my concern about the site and that tree when it was announced that Carrboro was going to have that site for the fire station. And the town, some of the town staff responded to me, and I appreciate that, including a personal invitation from Chief Travis, Chief Travis Crabtree. And I was assured that, thank you, we're aware of your concern. Other people are aware of your concern, and you'll have time. You'll certainly be invited, and you'll have input. So 2 weeks ago at the so-called charrette was the first time that we had an opportunity to have input. And as Kathy said, we had some input, and that's been described, but it was not a creative set of thoughtfulness. It was described that nobody stayed around at the end of the charrette. Well, at 9:45, a number of the townspeople who were there, I think there were really more than seven, but they had left early on because they couldn't stay through just the information presentation. I mean, we obviously know we've got an architect who's done more fire stations in the country than any other architect, so congratulations, you have that. So the timing was really inappropriate for the citizens to have substantial input. And then right at the end, Kathy and I were sitting there, and we were making some comments, and then I just felt, well, it was a moot point. I did say, well, let's have a real charrette, and this addresses your question, I think, Jackie. If Carrboro really wants this first building in, what, 20 years, and you're calling it green, well, cheap is not, green is not going to come cheaply. The first aspect of green is working with the site, not taking a preconceived thing and setting it on the site and making the site conform to the design, but to get on the site and juke and jive, see what the challenges are and see if something can be created that would, first of all, serve the firemen who are doing their job, both men and women, safety issues. And I really think if we all got out there on the site, we could look at that holly tree not being mutilated and not being destroyed and still being rendered not an obstruction to safety. My recommendation to the board and to the architects and the town is let's have a charrette. Let's have it for at least half a day, if not a day, on the site. And get the fire truck out there so we can see what the constraints are. Consider, because that site has incredible environmental opportunities for solar. And it's rather dramatic the way it dips down. You could potentially come up with a design that might build into the ground, sort of like there's a fire station over near Timberline on Weaver Dairy Road.
That's
nestled into the station. You've got the opportunity to do something there, do like modular, whatever. I'm not an architect. The bottom line is I would love to see this community working with the creative designers come up with something that tries to keep as much of the big tree landscape material that's already there. You don't have to water it. You don't have to plant it. 100-year-old plants are a magnificent landscape in which to settle a major Carlborough facility. And when I asked Ken, Windmore, they have already juked and jogged and worked with DOT, and they moved their entrance that away because they were already thinking about our holly tree. And so now when they went that away, my understanding is our entrance has to be right here. And when I asked the question at the meeting a couple of weeks ago, well, how wide does the fire station entry have to be? It has to be wide enough so a truck can be going out for an emergency and another truck can be coming in or something. Is that right? Yeah, you've got two big things going and operating. And so at the center, here's the island to there, the center, and we're centered here. And I was told that the width of the fire station lot didn't need to be any wider than the width of that, the Windmore lot. That actually gives a little bit more space on this holly. But anyway, the bottom line, the holly's a poster child. Would be wonderful if we can save a bit of our local vegetational heritage. It would be wonderful if we can utilize some of the landscape that's already there. More importantly, it'd be wonderful if we can come up with a green building that does that and comes up with something that works. I don't have the answers. I will support whatever the community comes up with. I may not be happy with it. I don't think cheap is going to do it. It's worth making a concerted effort. And I think if you really want what you're describing in the paper, if we want a green building, you want something that you'll be proud of. I mean, it's sort of like this community, the community garden, to have that well used, an old facility used, and to have some solar stuff bringing the, I mean, that's another thing Carlborough can be proud of. Anyway, so I hope you'll do it. And go out there on the site, get the folks involved, have it announced ahead of time, have it more than 3 hours, and have it so that it's not when half the people have fallen asleep.
Ken, I had one question for you. You talked about green, but do you necessarily feel it has to be LEED certified?
Oh, okay. I look at Jackie. I appreciate that Jackie was the only one of you folks who's so busy, and God bless you for everything you do, and you'll never be thanked enough for what you do and being ranted and raved at. But she was there, and I know that it was after the group, and I supported that, and Kathy, I don't know what Kathy, if she supported that particular one. But yes, I think just to have the official, it would be nice to have the official LEED thing. But if it's $60,000 to have that LEED guy there to make sure, then we can put $60,000 into maybe whatever. And maybe it's going to take $60,000 to have an honest-to-goodness charrette and come up with some ideas. Well,
But I mean, for other design elements, for other green design elements.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
All right, that's what it needs.
Solar, the whole bit. And good, that's it. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
All right, and Barbara Janeway.
True Carver and I tonight. I just want to say that regarding the whole global warming thing that's happening around the world, those trees, I've been out to that site, and there's a lot of trees down in here. And there's one big, huge old cedar up there at that narrow end. And the people that calculate carbon emissions say that a mature tree will pull out of the atmosphere 1 ton of carbon dioxide per year. So you got about, as far as I can tell, 8 big mature trees. And I just think, considering the whole bigger issue, this is a perfect local chance to, you know, really honor that. And the other thing I just keep thinking about, because I work with kids, is a lot of kids live in that neighborhood and get driven by there every day, and they're going to watch this whole process. They're going to watch us take down a big old holly tree. I'm stating that about the global warming, and I know you may not be able to save the holly tree, but there's so many other big trees. And you know, it's an example to kids. It really is. They're going to see the whole process of this. And lastly, I just want to say that the possibility of a charrette, I'll be there. I just didn't know about the first one, but I think it's a really good idea to do another one. And, you know, the possibility of, I don't know how the fireman feels about underground sleeping quarters, but I've been on that land and it's very noisy. What if you could sleep underground? You'd have a lot quieter sleep. So maybe you can design it that way to have the sleeping quarters underground. That's all I wanted to say.
All right.
Thanks, Barbara.
Thanks, Barbara. Okay. Let's take a look, if I can suggest, let's take a look at these three issues in the reverse order, because I think probably there's pretty broad agreement about the question of whether we need to actually be certified for LEED.
Right.
Is there?
Oh, I have a question. What I would like to see, if possible, is what we could get for that $60,000 if we're not certified.
What would that translate to?
So that we know exactly, you know, what the trade-off is. You know, I certainly, you know, I put out the article to you all that questions whether certification is valuable, but, you know, it's valuable. It's the not doing the certification makes sense if you know what you're getting
for your money is
going
to
really give some bang for your buck. So that's what I'd like to see before deciding that. I don't know if you can speak to that at all tonight, or if that's something we'd have to come back to.
Furniture.
Money for something.
How about you don't spend?
First, let me state for the record, I love trees. I live on land, farmland I was born and raised on and still live there. So it's not my goal to cut down any trees. It's my goal to accomplish your program for the budget that you have in place with the constraints you have in place. To answer your question, it's difficult. One of those costs that make up the $40,000 to $60,000 of certifying is to go ahead and register your project on day one, as soon as design begins, with the Green Council, United Green Council. So that being said, we would not know exactly until we get significantly into the project about what specific elements we would get for that 40 to 60. We could give you a range of ideas of what that likely could include, but we don't know specifically what that would be. We've got a whole list. You may have seen LEED is made up of a checklist of 5 divisions.
Yeah,
you're trying to, you get this, you get that, you get the other. So you can go down that list and say, yeah, that's probably about a $25,000 item, or that's a $10,000 item. Or you can go down and do that, which we're able to pick and choose from and accomplish on the project. Will not be known until we get further into the project. I know that's not the answer you wanted to hear.
Let me ask you something very specific, because then I think this is kind of following a bit on the last speaker who talked about the carbon reduction impact of those trees. And I think one concern we would all share is about the energy utilization and minimizing the carbon impact. Do you have a plan in mind at this point in terms of what the energy goal is for that building? And to the point that
to answer your question is yes, and that the energy consumption is the first, one of the first and foremost things that you are able to achieve on a new project because of the type of equipment that you use, because of the systems that you consider utilizing. So, yes, energy efficiency has to be part of the certification or the LEED goals or the sustainable design goals. So we would have there are a whole list of potential options there. We use A, we use B, we use C, we use D, or a combination of those to help accomplish those. So whether it's energy consumption, whether it's site sustainability, whatever of the five divisions which make up probably 200 items that you pull and choose from in LEED certification, there are many of those that could be used, and there's no doubt, even the LEED consultant himself will tell you that $40,000 to $60,000 will garner a lot more of those elements into your project, and we would be able to identify further into the project specifically what those are. I understand your concern. You don't want to sign off on $40,000 to $60,000 worth of more elements, and then there's no way to quantify that as you move into the project. But I guess what I'm telling you is to specifically quantify them, we've got to get further into the project.
Okay. Well, like, for example, a nearby municipality has a building project, and they set a standard for energy of looking at the current ASHRAE standard and exceeding that by 20%. So that was sort of, and I don't know what the meaning of 20% particular, I think it was a way. I don't know there was any more of saying, let's do a good bit better.
ASHRAE is required, forget sustainable and LEED, ASHRAE is required per the North Carolina Building Code. Okay, that standard that you're referring to is required. Now to get
to
the
20% beyond that.
The 20% beyond is what you, to do anything to certify or to get into LEED certification, you have to go beyond that ASHRAE standard, and I'm using estimates here, to at least a tune of 10% more.
Functional. Okay, well, I don't
want to... Wouldn't it simply, I mean, this seems like a fairly common sense thing. Wouldn't it simply serve the purposes simply to direct the architect to move forward as if we were going to go for LEED certification and to use whatever techniques and design elements you could that would necessarily satisfy that, but not simply going for the certifications? I mean, this kind of reminds me of you know, people who replace their light bulbs. And then they like use up enough paper for the press releases to announce they've changed their light bulbs out to knock down half of the trees on the site. So it's, you know, substance versus PR, I think, is what we really want to go for.
I think the concern with that, I mean, that's a good point, but the concern is that what I've seen raised is that the point system under LEED doesn't necessarily always move you in the same direction, where you might get a certain number of points, the same number of points for a bike rack as you get for a major investment in energy. And, you know, so it depends on kind of what our goals are. And so I'd rather direct the architects to look for what's really going to get us the most value.
Sure, I'm just suggesting that we just do that rather than concentrate on the cosmetic.
I like Alex's approach because it saves us money, but also that's the difference between a professional and an amateur. I mean, that amateurs that are better than professionals, but they cannot say, I got the license. I mean, to me, it's an investment, and you get those credits, you get like getting that diploma, you know, even though there are folks out there without diplomas who might know more than the engineers. It will help us to leverage grants, state, federal, whatever. It will help us with promote. I mean, to me, towns spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in marketing themselves and, branding themselves. This is what Carbora Bolivian is part of our mission and goals of becoming a sustainable community and help us achieve that. It represents less than 2% of the total cost of the project. It is, or if you want to put it in more practical terms, you know, it could be 2 months to up to 3 months of the cost of a delay due to whatever reasons, including, you know, delaying the whole project. So $60, $60,000 is a lot of money, but I think it's something that we will recover over time, not just in the facility, but as a whole town.
So you're saying, you want to get certified?
I think I will spend $60,000 on that.
Okay. It's getting late.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
Joel's
next.
Well, if I understand Alex's and John's idea is to go to design it for LEED certification without participating in having the LEED certification. Is that correct?
John's taking a different position.
No,
that wasn't what John was suggesting,
yeah.
But it is what Alex was
suggesting.
So you would pay for the LEED.
You'll pay for it.
That sounds good.
We heard it here. And your proposal is for the leads to go ahead and go get the LEED certification.
Who will recover the 60? It's an investment.
I don't know. I don't have to think about that.
All right.
Alex is proposing doable?
The architect maybe can respond to that.
Does that
make sense?
Go for the what's on the checklist without having the certification.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can use LEED simply as a checklist to design the building by.
And Dan had some additional direction, I think, that he wanted to give within that context about where the emphasis is placed, right?
Well, I don't want to direct where the emphasis is placed, but it's placed that the LEED scoring might not so much guide you as a sense of what the environmental values of this community are, which I think, you know, our staff is well aware of. And that being said,
as we are meeting to talk about which areas of LEED sustainability we want to achieve, the staff being aware of your goals would also point us in those directions, whether we go for certification or not.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Good. Mm-hmm. I appreciate John's point, but I'm going to move we do that.
Second.
Just to get us moving here.
All right. So the motion is that we pursue the goals, but not the certification, and that we attempt to take into account sort of the place more emphasis on the community's sort of environmental values than necessarily what the Green Building Council has come up with as far as what they consider to be the most important.
But as a process,
is that
process standpoint? We'll still use the LEED guidelines as the mechanism.
As the base
understanding of the community's
goals.
Just
keep
the we're not talking about bike racks.
Is that cushy enough for you guys to work with?
We'll put $60,000 towards the energy.
Right, and of course that the savings be put towards sustainable building practices and elements.
Or health insurance.
I think we need to hear a town manager. We'll talk about that in a minute. We hear from our town manager. You look like you want to say something.
That I think we can accomplish what I believe the board and the community wants by using the checklist as a guideline and taking into consideration what I think we as a staff understand the board's values when it comes to what needs to happen without having the piece of paper. If that piece of paper is really important to the community, we can do that. But I think there's an opportunity to get a bigger bang for the buck spending the same money by doing as opposed to certifying.
Right. Okay. It's been moved. All those in favor
we understand.
Of that
you got
thing,
it.
Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously.
Okay.
Now.
Second question.
Yeah, it seems to me that the two remaining questions are sort of related in a certain way. Mm-hmm.
You can't decide the second unless.
Can I make one comment about
the third? Until we're done the second.
Wait, Steve.
Just to remind the board, the budget that is in the adopted CIP, and the budget that was presented tonight, the option one. Both of those were based on an original program of work that we worked with MHA Works for the original cost estimate back in 2005. That was based on a single-story pre-engineered building with the idea that we would go for the LEED certification. So anybody that thinks that the staff or the town has suggested going on the cheap, that's simply not the case. In each of the three options, the assumption is made that we would be seeking a LEEDS-type certification or a LEEDS kind of building, whether we do the certification or not. So it's not the cheapest construction, but it is. But that we've got about $2.7 million estimated in the CIP, and that, you know, anticipates that construction won't start for another year or so. So those costs that Ken's talking about, $20,000 a month, that's, you know, roughly $250,000.
Yeah.
12 months from now, added to the 2.5 and change that's projected right now. So we're right on target with that estimate right now.
All right. Well, so let's turn to the charrette. The notion of another charrette. Do you want to start?
I was just going to say, I think that, you know, it makes sense to, you know, be right there on the property and walk it and at least offer that to citizens to have their input and maybe have some opportunity for design offerings.
Joel.
Well, you know, my only question with that is the expectations have to be clear. I mean, they have to be really clear about what you're expecting to come out of the meeting, or we'll be up here again for another 2 hours. Not that I mind, because my husband's home with the kids. So he's probably watching this now thinking, I'm going to kill you when you get home. But not literally. But, you know, the expectations have to be clear about what you expect, what you're going to do with people's input. And I think we need to be careful. I mean, so if we're going to have another charrette, the expectations have to be clear.
Well, I think that just having the opportunity to work with a model, to have a truck out there to see what you're dealing with is important. I think it's important for us. I think it's important for the citizens.
I'm not saying it's not important, but what I'm saying is be clear about what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If the result is the citizens say we want to put they want to come out on that other end, and we know there's an 18-and-a-half-foot site issue. And we say, no, what then happens? I'm not presupposing any particular end. What I'm saying is, in the process, we have certain expectations. And I think the board needs to decide what they expect to come out of the charrette, if you're going to have one.
I would just add, to Joel's point, I think that's very well taken, and that one of the other primary constraints that we're dealing with is the budgetary constraint. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like it or don't, we got 2.7 budgeted, and we can't go to 3.7. That's so we don't want to set the expectation, right, that we can make changes of that magnitude within the scope of what's reasonable. I mean,
Dan and then Jackie.
Yeah. Well, I agree with Joel also insofar as I think a lot of the problem that came out of the first charrette was on the level of expectations, and it wasn't what we think of as a charrette, and we kind of in the future need to make sure that doesn't happen and be clear. But my question following on Alex in terms of the budgetary issue is whether it's possible to over, then I guess we'd be looking at a Saturday morning, I'm assuming, and if it's possible, and we have June 16th, we're all busy, and I think we need to do it soon is what I'm getting at, so that we aren't having a delay. So is it possible to do a charrette out there on, I guess would be the 23rd, and then if there was anything we needed to discuss on the 26th, we could do it before we break for the summer, because I don't want to delay this.
Right.
Past the summer. So I think there's just a very clear logistical issue about, I guess, so the question is for you, Ken and Steve, whether that could be accommodated in that quick a time frame, and if you're afraid, and can we do that?
I don't know. I don't have my calendar with me. I'll have to check that. So.
And I don't know right offhand. I mean, it's we could try to make it work. I'll just point out, in the original contract with the firm, we had you know, one charrette. So depending on what we're talking about, and I just need to put it out there, we're talking about $3,000 or $4,000, and we had eight people at the last one. And it just depends on how much resources, and we're talking about a number of staff people. We had seven staff people for that the last one.
Okay, let's go to Jackie.
I am the least technical of any of us on this board, but I'd like to propose that instead we have a virtual charrette. There are a whole lot of very, very creative people in this town, and I think sometimes, you know, this community, when they say charrette, they mean charrette in the traditional sense. And we have many well-versed designers, and it's just, for a little tiny town, we're pretty dense in many ways. But I think we could come up with something. Maybe Dan could think of some things where if we put the information and the plans and pictures on our website, then for a month we could invite the design community here and citizens to give their input into what they think should be happening, and even set up one or two separate chat rooms where citizens could live talk to each other like they're around a table, but a virtual table, about how to do things. I think that would save us money, and it would save us the scheduling issue.
Is that a totally bizarre idea?
No, it's not totally bizarre.
Dan's nodding.
Not
it's
totally.
A bizarre idea.
Not totally bizarre.
It is, because you lose the graphical dimension,
right,
in terms of the interaction among the
every
people.
Time every time I try to get technical, I mess up.
That's, well, is there a way to convey the size and proportionality needs for the vehicles to enter and exit? Is that something that can be done, you know, through graphics or through videotaping? I don't know. You know, I mean, those trucks are huge.
Do we have to have the architects here to have the charrette? Because we've already had input from them.
I'm just wondering, I mean, if there's a way to...
The architect to do the design.
Yeah.
Is there a way to show what happens if you had, one of the trucks trying to maneuver, you know, on that space? Because that's really what's going to dictate it. Can it get in and out fast enough to get where it needs to go in, you know, an emergency?
And safely.
And safely, of course.
I can say that fire trucks don't go well off the paved road. And for that site, there's very little space. We'd be lucky to get on it, turn around, and get back off of what's there right now.
They sink,
and it's an expensive tow bill.
We were talking before
about modeling, and I'm just wondering, is there a way that you can create a model and graphically and have that on the website too?
We'll be happy, particularly at the $60,000 level mentioned. We'll do several charrettes for you.
Yeah, thanks.
No, we're not going to spend that kind of money.
The real question in a charrette, and based on many of the comments that have been raised in the previous public meeting and even some tonight, is the fire department, the end users, willing to change their program? Okay? They have specified vehicles of certain length that's got to be accommodated here, which means a building of certain depth, which means driveways of certain depth, which, as I said earlier, has to happen right there if it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere between 75 and 95% of the decisions that you want to make have been made based on the constraints of what's in place. So if the fire department is willing to say, no, we'll have back-end bays and stop traffic in the street to back vehicles in, then we can accomplish some more of the things that have been brought up. But the real question is, are we restricted by the program requirements, which normally you are?
Okay, well, the other question is, I mean, I know there's a couple of people who are interested in having a very detailed level of input in this project, but that and I suppose hypothetically that there might be some more people who aren't here, you know, who we haven't heard from, who might be interested in doing that. But just one possibility that occurs to me is that it would be possible to have a meeting, not necessarily to be called a charrette, that might happen. I think a number of the speakers who were particularly interested in this, I believe, are retired. You know, perhaps it's possible that we could do it during during business week. You know, set aside some time one afternoon later this month or something like that, and ask the folks who have a particular interest in this topic to come and meet with town staff and with the architect and set up that meeting and have an opportunity to explore some of these issues without necessarily having it become too grand of an affair.
Very nice. I'm not opposed to that. But I think we need to make the expectations clear. You know, I hate to sound like a bad, evil person, but, well, some days, but I don't want to. But we entered into the agreement with UNC to build a fire station. You know, it is more complex than just the site constraints. We are stewards of the town's money, of the town's resources, which is our human resources. And we said to the people, we're going to build a fire station. This is what we have. We didn't condemn anybody's property and make them mad. We didn't spend an exorbitant amount of money for a piece of property. And here we are. Whatever the expectations are, they need to be clear. If they say they need 166 feet, for the bay, for the fire department, those are the design constraints. Because it is a fire station. At the end of the day, we have to decide how much money we're going to spend on a fire station, either 2.7 or 3.4. Because if we continue to delay, it's going to cost us more money. And I'm not opposed to it, but I think the expectations need to be clear, or people are still going to be unhappy when they get out of a meeting. And we would have wasted their time and his time. And every time we see him, we're writing a check. And keep that in mind.
Thank you, by the way.
I want to second Alderman Brown's statement, and let me say like it is. And I think it is a waste of these talented folks' time when we know the room for feedback and input is very limited. And it is driven by the bottom line. And this is a fire station. It would be something else. I mean, we shouldn't even call it. I mean, it should be a public input meeting. But, again, I trust we have a very professional and brilliant staff and really good architect, and they're going to do what we had asked them to do, and we need to trust that, and we need to save money, because if we don't spend it here, we're going to spend it somewhere else. But I think we should just, as much as we can, we're going to keep taking feedback. But I mean, I understand this is Scarborough, but we cannot just do it, you know, spend money for the sake of it when we know we're limited, no matter how much creativity we have, and I prefer to use that talent in other projects of the town, and it's something that we're paying an architect to design too.
So we're all looking at the calendar.
Oh, okay.
They're whispering about the calendar over here.
I like Mark's idea that, you know, keep it simple. You know, get the people who feel like they can make a contribution out there. And,
I like that too.
You know,
why can't we do it this way? I like Jackie's idea, and I think if we can get a model on a graphic on the website, folks can respond to that. And I also think it makes sense for some people to get out there and walk that space and really know what Ken knows and some of us who've walked it know. And I don't know that that involves the architect. I think, you know, if you see a model on, you know, on the website and you go out there and walk it, you can put one and one together and get two and realize this is far more constrained than I had
imagined, et cetera, et cetera.
And then we go to this little afternoon meeting, Mark.
Honestly, and then have a meeting.
Honestly, I think probably, you know, figuring out a way to do a graphical presentation of this on the website probably costs more than, that probably cost $60,000. No. But, if we did the type of sort of technical meeting that I was describing, I think it would probably suffice. I could try to make myself available there to make sure that we're getting to the level of conversation and that we're keeping the conversation grounded in reality, which I think is what Joel's point is. It needs to be a fire station.
And my only concern is when you have this meeting, at the end of the meeting, what do you expect to get out of the meeting? There's got to be some end result when you go into a meeting. If we're going to have a meeting on, like we're here tonight, we have an end result with the agenda.
We would hope.
You know, at some time we'll get out of here.
But Joel, if the end result is that the citizens who have concerns see a model that shows them that the trucks are really limited in terms of how they can maneuver on that footprint, and that satisfies, you know, their sense of you know, fair play, you know, I think that makes it, I think it's very important for folks to realize that this isn't an arbitrary decision, that these trucks are determining, you know, how we're making the decision.
And that's fine. If that's the if people know going in,
right,
that's what's going to happen. But if you don't know what's going in at the end of the day, and you think you have more input than you're really going to have, then you're going to be just as unhappy as you are and wasted another 2 hours.
Well, that says Kathy.
Okay, how about this, boys and girls?
That's just my point. I'm not going to
do that. Let me just try something and see if it flows.
Please.
Because everybody's getting impatient here. all right, since we made a decision where we're going to reallocate $40,000 to $60,000 in resources toward, fine, let's knock $4,000 off of that, and we'll do another meeting, but set the with the understanding that the program is not going to be changed, A, and B, we're operating within a projected budget. Those are our primary constraints. Does that work?
That works for me.
So moved. Let's do that.
So we want to do that for 15 people? For 10 people?
See how many folks show up?
I still support Mark's idea. I think if we get word out...
That is Mark's idea.
That is Mark's idea.
I guess the question is, for $4,000.
Not the full blown deal.
We'll give you $200 and it's going to be...
Let
me suggest that we let the staff handle the details of when it would happen, but the basic point I was trying to get at is during the work week we're not asking Travis to sacrifice it, you know, another Saturday morning to this and other town staff members, and that we proceed. We ask the staff to put that meeting together, if at all possible, in June of this year.
Before the 26th, in case we need to discuss anything before we break. Right, because we still have to make that decision.
On the third issue, which is the construction technique that we're using. I feel like I'm ready to say that it needs to be a pre-engineered building already, but
budget's dictating that.
Let me suggest this. If there's sufficient support for that, let's just say that is what we are going to do.
Right.
Obviously, following this meeting, that could potentially
be... Okay, I'll make it 2-for-1. I'll amend the motion to include
that.
There
you go. Second.
I have a comment on that, because it does seem to me that there's the possibility that out of this discussion, there could be, a $100,000 or $200,000 cost difference in terms of the design and construction that could make a big difference. I'm not assuming that's going to happen, but I think... Just if it does, then we should have the opportunity to come back and look.
Well, let me suggest this. Like I said, I'm more than happy to arrange to go to this particular meeting. And I think if that level of decision becomes apparent to me, I will try to make sure that I raise that issue with the board, because I'm willing to hear about that. We're going to spend $70,000 to save
a tree, but $700,000 I can't deal with. So
I can't say that I'm going to agree to spend $70,000.
I'm not asking you to agree to that.
Okay, I just want people to be clear.
I'm not asking you to.
Right now.
We're clear.
Early.
Right. We're clear.
I said and I only said I'm willing to hear about it. I didn't say I'm willing to do it. So
okay, I'm backing off of that.
Okay,
because, as I said, I think that the budgetary constraints speak for themselves. And those are the two immutable constraints.
Right.
Okay.
The program and the budget.
That works well. And
okay.
The land.
Your original motion was that we have this meeting and that the direction is that we're sticking with the program, the architectural program we have, and that
and
we're sticking with the budget
and
that
the budget.
We have. Indicated in our CIP.
The budget that's in the CIP, which is 2.7 and change.
Right.
And that is
that's
that
it.
Is where
so
we're
not doing
it. So that was the motion.
Okay. And we have it seconded.
Who seconded it?
I think I did.
Okay, Joel seconded it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Matter passed unanimously.
I'm sorry.
You don't
Dad.
Get to vote.
I'm not voting.
He's raising his hand.
I would have voted a long time ago.
go ahead.
But maybe everybody else knows what this meeting is, but I don't yet know what you're asking. Is it going to be more a technical meeting? Or are we talking about whether we call it a charrette or a public meeting or whatever? Is it a full-blown put out the banners and do all the things that
No,
that
I don't
we
think
did
it is.
Before.
So I don't think it is that.
Well, just put out as,
I think we give the public notice this conversation is some pretty good notice to people who are interested in the fire station issues involved here, and I think I would notify the people. I would certainly notify the people who came to the last.
And if it's going to be somewhat more technical in nature, one of the players that was not at the May 21st charrette was UNC, and they're going to be involved. Well, they were invited. Mm-hmm. But I would really like to have somebody from UNC
at the table
because they're going to be reviewing all this, and they've got to have their stamp of approval.
Well, and during business hours, maybe it may be easier to get them more involved in projects. So,
and I would hope that Dan's taken from this conversation that something that would be obviously very helpful is just to as simply as you possibly can to graphically show the physical footprint that's going to be dictated by Travis's program.
Yeah, how these
constraints
really play out.
Going back to what we were talking about
right.
a bloody hour ago, that is a hard constraint.
We did that in the first charrette, and it wasn't taken kindly to.
Oh.
Well,
do it again.
I'll be honest, the accusation was that all the decisions had been made by showing those bubbles.
Well, you cannot make a duck a dog. You can't make a dog a duck. It's either that or it's not. And people can bring a model and discuss if it's technical.
That's fine.
And then y'all will bring it back to us.
What?
I need a break.
Okay. Well, we've all right.
Kim, we're going to take a
do you have what you need?
7-minute recess.
Thank
you.
We're done with this item.
Our 7 minutes are up. Let's get going. He's coming. We still have a quorum. We could all leave and one person be here and still have a quorum until it's adjourned.
That's right.
Oh. This is starting to look like what I would like to do.
Thank you for bringing us back to order, Mayor Pro Tempore. All right. Board members, during the break, I was just discussing agenda item D4, which is the last item on our agenda, continued discussion of land use ordinance text amendment pertaining to open space livability requirements. After consulting with the staff, it sounds like it would be possible to move that item to the beginning of next week's agenda, rather than staying here until midnight tonight.
Okay.
Very good.
Yeah. That's a good idea. The only thing I would say is, Mayor, that I will be absent.
Me too.
Next week?
Next Tuesday. But I can send an email. I have not a problem sending an email and telling people exactly what my opinion is.
It would be if there is an amendment, if Mr. Attorney, if we were to actually get to the point of adopting a change to the land use ordinance next week, and two members were absent, we would have only five members here. What are the rules on an ordinance change? How many votes? That type of thing.
Three.
Still, you just have to have the majority because we've got a charter special thing amendment.
So we only need a simple majority on one occasion.
Yes, once you've held a public hearing on an ordinance under our charter.
We don't do proxy, do we?
No, we shouldn't do proxy.
No, proxy. All right, well, I will just say that for my part that I'm I will commit to the notion that we're not that we won't use your absence, y'all's absence, to reach a different result than we might otherwise have.
That's fine. I'll
you come back and make us change it again if we could go too far wrong.
And you know I will.
I do.
Okay, I'm leaving right. At 11.
Okay.
Okay.
Mr. Manager, now for a simple matter, your final budget preparation.
Well, you do the right thing, it will be very simple.
Uh-huh.
As the board directs the manager to prepare the final budget for fiscal year 2007-2008, as you all know, by state law, you have to approve a balanced budget by July 1st. And the purpose of this item is for you all to give me, hopefully, final direction as to what you would like to see in the budget that is anticipated to be adopted on June 19th, which is the next regular meeting. There were three items that you all had specifically asked about, I believe, that following the public hearing on the budget. There are staff reports as a part of your agenda packet. We don't have a staff presentation on these items or anything else related to the budget. Department heads are here as well as myself. We're happy to try to respond to any questions that you all have, and we try to respond to the issues that you all had previously inquired about.
Okay.
So are we going to take them in order?
Yeah.
Fine.
Go right ahead.
Well, I have one question on the insurance issue, which is in the report, it says that medical underwriters fear that when employers begin to add eligibility outside marketplace norms, they're positioning themselves to attract people who would not otherwise be able to receive coverage due to prior medical conditions. Now, I could understand that being a concern for a large employer where there's like a large new class of people being added. But I guess my question is, when we're talking about our seven part-time people and positions that open only rarely, is that really a serious vulnerability? You know, that, I mean, there's someone out there just waiting for the chance to get Charmin's job and who's going to apply and get it. With their prior condition, it doesn't seem, I don't know, it just didn't seem credible to me.
You know, we've worked really hard to try to show you all ways to minimize our risk based on what's happened with our insurance coverage. Our insurance broker, who represents the town's interest, not the insurance company's interest, has advised us that it is not the norm to add part-time employees to health insurance coverage. That means when something goes outside the norm, it raises a red flag to insurers. As we know very well, it sometimes only takes one large claimant to have a significant impact on our claims experience, which translates into premium increases. The concern is, whether it plays out this way or not in the town of Carrboro, is that because the majority of employers do not provide that kind of coverage for part-timers, is that there potentially would be more people who may have serious health risk that might apply for a job with the town of Carrboro than somebody else, unlike most employers, particularly local government employers, provide health insurance coverage for full-time employees, and so there's not the same concern about the risk. And that's why if the board were considering doing something, we would suggest the stipend, because there's not an impact on the health insurance. But on the one hand, we're suggesting, as we did last year, that we need to make some adjustments on the retiree health insurance to try to affect the trend in a positive way with our health insurance increases. And then on the other side, we're looking at taking an approach that adds a perceived high-risk group of employees into our employment. We have 7 part-time employees now. I don't know what that might look like some years down the road, and just because we've got these 7 employees now doesn't mean those same 7 employees will be here tomorrow, next week, next month, or next year. So we've given you the best information that we can give you. We think it increases our risk for insurance in the future, and it greatens the likelihood that we'll see larger premiums. Can I guarantee that? Absolutely not. But I know that it does increase our risk in the marketplace.
I wish that the part-time employee health insurance item was being presented in conjunction with the retirement health insurance, because comments that I want to make are pertinent to both. But I'll limit myself right now with the part-time. As long as each individual entity that provides health insurance to its employees is operating in its own best short-term self-interest, which it should, which it has to, which we feel like we have to and you feel like you have to. But as long as each of them does that, then the only people who really win are the health insurance companies at making ever and ever more money, and their CEOs making obscene salaries. In the long run, we all pay the cost of the and the underinsured, whether we pay for it through our town coffers, through taxes, or whether we pay for it through other taxes that help take care of people who are lacking health insurance. We do pay for it. So if every municipality and every employer would say, hey, we're going to do this because it's the right thing to do, then the game would change. But we're all put in positions where we can't say that. I really believe that when you make a decision, you should make a decision following Kant's categorical imperative, that you make decisions based on how you would like to see the best in the world happen. I'm slaughtering the imperative there, but you know what I mean. I am going to support providing health insurance to part-time employees because it is the right thing to do. And because if we do it, then maybe other places will do it too. Now, I don't really care whether that's through our own policy or whether it's through a stipend. I trust them to use that stipend. I remember 15 years ago when I advocated adding dependents, children, to employees' health care. We didn't have that before then. And there were all kinds of arguments that, oh, well, you know, if so-and-so has 5 kids and somebody else has no kids, then the person with no kids feels like they're being short-shifted. Well, that's pretty narrow and selfish way to look at things, so I didn't go along with that, and neither did the rest of the board. I understand the financial constraints. I really do. But I cannot sit here and say, I'm not going to do that. The health insurance companies throw that line out that will attract, so what, people who only work part-time are kind of, you know, dirty scum of the earth who are sicker than the rest of us? You know, what is that? They make that up and they throw that out just to keep limiting the number of people who use health insurance. I want us to find a way to help our part-time employees, our permanent part-time employees have health insurance. I think it is our moral obligation. It's how I want the world to work, so it's what I'm going to support. Sorry for adding to the length of the meeting.
Well, I agree, but I want to say I don't support the stipend because it's not clear that it's directly providing health insurance. In fact, it's not. And I don't know that that's fair to other workers. But I agree with you, Jack, and I support the provision of the insurance for exactly the reasons you articulate.
I would actually be willing to support the stipend, provided, of course, people are willing to make a couple hard choices on a couple of other items to offset it. And I'll be prepared to put those out. I mean, I think we can all agree the environment that we're working in is a very difficult one, and Jackie outlined that. I think we can all agree the private health insurance industry and system that we have to work with right now is nothing more than a legalized protection racket. But that's the way it is. So I think staff in suggesting the stipend as an alternative puts the town as an organization and an entity in a position where we can assist part-time employees but minimize the risk to the rest of the organization. So that's what I'd be willing to do.
If I might be the bad guy of the movie here.
No.
Mr. Manager, how many years of experience do you have?
About 32.
32, thank you.
Young.
I really believe, and I will tell you why I strongly support the position of the recommendation of the staff, especially the recommendation of our manager, because I really believe we have a brilliant manager, a brilliant staff, who is fair and who is frugal, who has introduced to us and submitted to us a budget that is really good and well-balanced, and that looks for the best interest of the whole organization and the whole town. And it is tough. I mean, he was hesitant when he made the presentation, and I mean, this is the first time we is raising taxes, but it is, we cannot, I mean, and this is our job, is to make that final decision, those hard decisions that impacts everybody's lives in Carrboro. I think I want to do something about it. I think that should be part of a bigger discussion about town benefits to all employees, not just the part-times, in all fairness, and have a serious discussion to make sure, you know, how can we have the strengthened, you know, the whole benefits package of our employees. Also, if this is a priority, which, I mean, of course, we want to do the right thing, and it's hard not to personalize it when we know the people being impacted by that, but this is something bigger than just the town of Carrboro, and if we're serious about making this a priority, let's put it in our list of priorities to our state legislatures and say, let's work on this, let's start. There are things we can do at the state level. Right now, the state legislature is discussing the whole Medicaid question, and they're going to shift that to the counties, and the counties are going to raise the taxes on all of us because the Senate and the General Assembly is not wanting to renew the quarter of a cent tax, sales tax in North Carolina. So at some point, somebody's going to have to deal with this. And so let's push and let's advocate and let's lobby for a system that is more humane and is more fair. But let's not do a piecemeal solutions to the benefits package of all the town employees, and also not to talk about just the issue of cutting the benefits of retirees for the town. So it's they're tough decisions. I really respect the recommendation of somebody who has been working for many, many years at this, and who I believe is fair, and is looking for the best interest of the whole of all the people of Carborough, not just a few people, the most impacted. And unfortunately, those are the decisions we have to make as policymakers. Is looking for the whole, the benefit of the entire, in the majority of the folks.
I talked with the employee, and I certainly could support a stipend as one way of at least venturing into an area of coverage. I think it's really important to, break this barrier of coverage and make accessible health care. It really concerns me that health care is for some, not for all. But if a stipend can work within the plan for the town, I, like Alex, I can work with it. And I think if it can be outlined and clearly delineated as best as possible to not open a Pandora's box, I think we should definitely go that route to create, make the statement, this is what we value.
Joel, you have any comment on it?
I've been thinking about this a long time. Probably the only thing that I could support is a stipend at best, and it's a struggle for me because on the one hand, I'd like to provide health insurance to everybody, but on the other hand, we have to look at what we do to the health plan of the entire organization. We have full-time employees who have an expectation of what's going to happen. There's some sort of predictability. We have citizens that we have to answer to for the decisions we make. And it's a matter of stewardship, And it's a very difficult situation, and I don't think you should demonize the people who disagree with the position, because they don't disagree with the position because they don't believe everyone should have health care. They disagree with the process of how we got here. And so I don't think there's anybody on this board that would say, no, you have health insurance, and no, you don't have health insurance, and the next person. And so part of the problem with this discussion is that I think opposition has been slightly demonized if you don't want to give somebody health insurance, because that's not the case. When you look at the county funds, people asking for more money to fund the schools, and then you come to us, people are writing big checks because we like living in Carborough, and we expect certain things. And we, as the policymakers, have to decide how we're going to write that check. And in what amount are we going to write that check? And I don't necessarily think that the decision to offer a stipend or even to oppose it is a short term, in my opinion. And, I respectfully disagree with what happens to the town. One of our former aldermen said it best. We are a rich community, but we are a poor town. I'm going to repeat it. We are a rich community, but we are a poor town. We are making decisions about money when we had 8% less tax revenue from retail. Hear the whoosh that goes east and west of us. Some of the decisions that people advocated on this board, people that are on other boards, got us partially in the position that we are now. Overall, and I'm including myself in that, overall, we didn't push enough to increase and spread the burden of taxes because we discuss affordable housing on people that live in affordable housing having to pay for affordable housing. So you're going to tell someone living on a fixed income, we're going to increase your taxes to provide somebody else health insurance, and you may have difficulty getting health insurance. That we could look at it that way. So I thought about it for a long time. I can agree to a stipend and no more.
Did you want to go ahead?
It's plenty long meeting without me going on.
Okay. Here's the ouch part. My caveat was that something else has to go. We have to actually make decisions, and that if I were going to support that, something would have to go.
Okay.
And so my recommendations are, or my caveat is, I will support it. Unfortunately, in order to do so, we would have to delete laser grading of ball fields, and I'm coming up with multiple choice. Pick your pain. Either vehicle lifts, that's not a replacement, that's an addition, right? Or the inspection machine. The combination of those will get us, and this is at setting the rate at $1,500 per year.
Uh-huh.
The number we discussed was $10,500, so that's roughly a zero-sum game. That's my proposal.
Uh-huh.
Pick your pain on the last two. Which one do you want to keep and which one do you want to go? Steve?
Well, a couple of those are have a return on
investment. The vehicle inspection machine has a payback over about 3.4 years, as I recall, plus it saves staff time.
Right.
The vehicle lifts, and George, please feel free to jump in. The vehicle lifts, as I recall, part of it's a safety issue, part of it's an efficiency issue. The lifts that we have now don't lock in various positions, and it makes it more difficult.
Where is George?
I don't want to say more than I know, but,
I understand it's an upgrade rather than replacing equipment
so
that is.
I think if we had, if we,
or
I think, and George, jump in, but I think if we had to do without one or the other, it would be the vehicle inspection machine, though it's got a return on investment.
Right.
It's not a safety issue.
Right. Yeah, that's correct. The two lifts we have in the garage, the one is a scissors jack, which lifts the vehicle only a short height and limits the ability to work underneath it. Okay.
Well.
And the other one raises, but it has to be at full height in order to lock in and so forth and be safe. So there's limiting in terms of productivity.
Okay. No more working stuff.
Tell me about the laser grading of the ball fields again.
Go ahead, George.
The laser grading of the ball fields involves hiring a contractor to come in with it's basically a small grader, much like a road grader, but a smaller version of that, sets up equipment, and then levels the infield. That's all we would be doing at four fields.
Anderson Park?
It would be three fields at Anderson Park and the field at Wilson Park. And the need is based on the fact that after years of grading and dragging in preparation for ball fields, the dirt shifts around as well as erosion. And this type of process I don't think has ever been done here. And we received some complaints about the fields. We've done our best in terms of the maintenance that we can do, but we propose this as finally improving and addressing some of the concerns.
Yeah, that was a direct response to folks who were very involved in the...
Oh, yeah, I've heard it, but... I'm saying pick your pain. You got to give some, at least from my perspective. You know, I might be sitting over here going wah wah at the end of this vote. But
and why is that? I mean, we're looking at what, a 2.8% tax increase, and if we don't take those out, we'd be looking at 2.82 or 2.81.
Yeah.
And why is that so?
It's a philosophical matter in that.
in that, that sometimes you have to make hard choices. And that.
But maybe this isn't one of those times. And we're talking about a small amount of money, $1,500 times seven.
I understand that.
Yeah,
that's
$16 million budget.
Sure. I mean, I understand your point, but that's an argument that's consistently advanced. And when the argument is advanced over and over, the small numbers turn into big numbers, and they particularly turn into big numbers over a long period of time and over several, many budget cycles. And that's kind of how stuff happens. Anyway, I'm done arguing my point. I've made my point. People can do what they want with it. So that's what I'm moving.
Let me clarify. Let me just clarify one more time. If a stipend was the avenue we pursued,
yes,
and the stipend was directed towards health insurance, and then employees that already had health insurance might not be utilizing it that or you need to use
yeah, I mean,
it
that's,
at all.
That's just a risk.
Well, we can't condition the money
exactly,
on the question
but,
of what people are going to do with it in terms of health insurance.
Okay.
We're basically giving them a dollar an hour raise is what it kind of boils down to.
All right.
Let's do that.
Well, part-time employees.
Okay. Well,
somebody make a motion.
I done moved it already, actually.
Well, you did.
It's a conditional motion. The motion is to provide the stipend at the level of $1,500 per employee, which is a total of 10-5, and that is coupled with deleting laser grading of ball fields and the inspection machine. And I understand the investment return over time, but this gets us through this budget year, and
we could
whoever happens to be hanging around next year can figure this one out.
Okay, that was the motion then, is for the stipend and for deletion of laser grading ball fields and inspection machine. Is there a second for that motion? Okay. Hearing none. Is there? Are there any other motions with respect to this, Jack?
Yeah, I'm going to. Yeah, because I really believe in it. I'm going to move that we add the money to the budget that is needed to provide the stipends for the 7 part-time employees to get health insurance. And that the tax rate go up accordingly, which will be like 0.0001 or something.
Well,
is there a discussion time before we go?
Yes.
Briefly. But it's just not that simple. There are other effects that derive from that. And while the motion in its language is simple, the effects are more complex. And we need to be upfront with the people that vote that the circumstances are more complex than that. It's not that simple. If it were that simple, we wouldn't be agonizing over it.
Right.
So I just feel like...
Well, let's
go ahead and vote.
Well, I'm
let's
sorry. I did not purposely put forth an oversimplistic thing. After 21 years, I understand.
I don't care if you've been here 25 years. Everybody has a right to their opinion. And I feel like the way you just said that was just very disrespectful.
Okay.
I'm ready to vote.
Well, so let's confine the motion to the point that the proposal is to add the stipend rather than a discussion of what the exact consequence is with respect to taxes, and also maybe just acknowledge that there are, staff has raised other issues besides simply the money that are implicated in this decision. And so with due respect for all points of view on the subject, we'll call for those in favor of adding the stipend.
No second.
Was there a second? Is there a second to Jackie's motion?
I'll second it.
All right. It's been moved and seconded that we add the stipend. All those in favor?
But let's be clear. Just adding the stipend, that's...
That's the motion.
That's it. Stipend
what
alone.
What the consequences are going to bring?
I'm aware.
Well, but Jackie also talked about taxes.
Well,
I want to be very clear that.
Okay. Well,
what
I,
if
think,
I, amend,
I think. A,
okay.
Go ahead.
No, please, Mark.
We can't say accordingly. I mean, we have to be specific.
It's well, no, we don't have to be that
looking
specific.
Looking at a budget
no,
addition,
it's
a
line
five.
Okay, it's a new line item.
Right. New line item 10-5.
This is not the budget ordinance that we're voting on. You know, this is our instructions to the manager. So I guess my position is, or my thought about that is, we can say with, adjusting the budget and so forth accordingly, because the manager will bring back to us an ordinance that reflects that if we adopt this motion. Is that fair to say, Mr. Manager?
Yes, sir.
So he will get the very technical treatment of that question. But for what it's worth, a penny on our residential property taxes rate generates about how much revenue to the town?
About $150,000.
Okay. So we're talking about something in the range of a tenth of a cent on tax, maybe 0.08, something like that.
Everything stays neutral and nobody else raises taxes.
That much is clear. Okay, so that is what the motion is. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed?
No.
The motion carries on a 4-3 vote.
And we're the three ogres. We will be available in the parking lot for tarring and feathering.
No tarring and feathering. What else do we need to discuss on this? There's the town commons reservation. Is that the next?
Are there people wanting to speak on that? Because
actually, I do have some people signed up. Yes, I have two people signed up.
Two very patient.
Brian is the first person signed up. Okay.
Hi, y'all are. I don't envy you. We try to make this as quick as I can. Let's see. Last Friday, my friend Vincy called me and invited me to join her in speaking with people from the Recreation and Parks Department. Now, at long length, I was able to find the proposal that we discussed on Attachment D1. I don't know if y'all have access to this.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, it appears here a little bit differently than it was put to us, but I guess ostensibly we were having a discussion to feel out. It calls us representatives of the free market here, but Vincy made it clear that no one was a representative of the free market, that we were just people who were involved in and concerned about the free markets. It seemed at the time like they already had the proposal sorted out, that it wasn't really up for dialogue. And it seems clear to me now that was the case, looking at the text here. The town can offer a time slot on Sundays from 1:30 to 5:30 p.m. That wasn't exactly the way it was put to us. Brendan did ask how we felt about Sundays. You know, do you think that Sundays could work for the free market? I want to put it out there that I think that a lot of the people who are involved in the really, really free markets are not interested in it happening on Sundays. Just don't kill the messenger. I just think that's the case.
And when is it normally?
It's normally the first Saturday of every month.
Okay.
It's been that.
It's like 1 to 5 or something like that.
Okay. It's actually 1:30 to, usually it's pretty clean by 4:30.
Okay.
Saturday afternoon.
Yeah. Now, the Vincy, right at the discussion on Friday, I did my best to, just to figure out if there were options. They were proposing a four-hour time block at a set time every week that would be for events that could be reserved free. Vincy had another proposal that events that are free, open to the public, that do not make exclusive use of the space, that is to say, the space could also be used by other people at the same time, and that are a community building, if I understand it.
Yep.
That those events be free.
Did he send us the email?
Yeah,
sent that to you. Yes, she sent you, as I understand it, a pretty lengthy proposal along these lines, which I'm not going to go through it all right now. I did perform a little experiment last Saturday just to see what people in Carborough thought about Vincy's proposal, and I went out to the free market with Vincy's proposal. The town commons should be free for any event that is free, open to the public community building and does not monopolize the space. And I was able to collect almost 200 signatures in about an hour with this. So that's just to let you all know where it seems like the citizens of the town, at least the ones that use the free market often, seem to be at, as far as I can tell.
And could you refresh our memories on what the standard of community building would be?
Well,
and
that
the staff
would be
looking at that.
Yeah, that would be, that's not been discussed yet, but that would be the question, I suppose. I would personally, just if I was personally asked to speak on it, I would say that community building would be something that brought people together in a space where everyone is equally comfortable and welcome, regardless of their financial means or their cultural background, and that contributes to a sense of camaraderie and common cause among the people of Carborough. If I was asked to speak extemporaneously on the subject, that would be the best I could do. And I just want to say that I would love to see a lot of events on the town commons on a regular basis. I don't think that it would lose the town very much. And clearly, there's a lot of energy and support behind Vinci's proposal. I respect that the people from Parks and Recreation have been making an effort to come up with a proposal that works for them. I'll leave it to the people to speak after me to fill out this perspective.
Can I just ask, I'm really not clear why the Sunday 1:30 to 5:30 doesn't work. What is the objection?
I guess the free markets have been on Saturday afternoons in Carborough since.
But it's only on one Saturday. But
it's the first Saturday of every month. I don't think the free markets would become weekly.
Right, but this is. But what I'm saying is, and what's the issue of moving it to Sunday and having more options for use if it's free?
Again, I can't speak as a representative of the free market, but there are a lot of people who are involved, and just the general. The zeitgeist, as far as I can tell, is that people are invested in Saturday.
Uh-huh. Even if Sunday is free and Saturday would require a charge because Saturday is a premium day given the farmer's market. Okay.
Does anybody else have a question for me before I sit down?
Thanks, Brian.
Stephen Silverleaf.
Hi, I'm Stephen Silverleaf. I'm a local artist, and I reside and work in Carborough. And I would say over the last year and a half, I have kind of found out about the really, really free market. I don't know a ton about it. It seems like a social experiment. I'm not going to go too much in depth with it because it is getting late. Community building, it seems like an incredible experiment, teaching a lot of people about commodity. And, you know, I've heard a lot of concern tonight about saving the planet and Carborough's kind of concern on carbon emissions. And one of the things that we seem to be, just the amount of commodity, the amount of stuff that is thrown in the landfill, the amount of stuff that is bought and sold, the amount of levels of buying and selling and trading and whatnot. And the really free market kind of addresses a lot of that. The first time you go, you get really greedy. I mean, after all, it's free. You fill your car up, you take it home, and realize you really don't need all this stuff, and you haul it back there the next Saturday. Saturday afternoon is probably a really, really good time as an artist for having had hundreds of open studios and other events in the Triangle. Saturday afternoon seems to be a time when people are kind of getting over there. I mean, it's a very lax time in the weekend. Sunday afternoon, most of us are really trying to use the later part of the afternoon to get ready for the week again. We have chores to do, things to do. So I think Saturday afternoon is the optimum time for this kind of experiment. I can't say enough good about it. I've watched it. I really like the energy, the alternative energy of the experiment in the sense of the, I'm going to say the kids because I'm getting a little bit older, but just the amount of responsibility, the kind of thinking it through, and the fact that, in a funny sort of way, nobody seems to know who, what, where, and how this whole thing is happening, but it gets totally cleaned up, it kind of happens, and then goes away, and it seems a very responsible thing inside of all of that. So I guess there are two things that I would like to say. I would like to keep it on Saturday afternoon, and I think it would be a kind of a contradiction in terms to be charging $100 for a really, really free market. So I would like to keep it really free for all the citizens of Carrboro. By the way, I grew up about, I would say, 3,000 or 4,000 feet from the well that was being discussed tonight. And that was, we had a well also, and it was some really sweet well water. So thank you, and good night.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Monica Gungley. Okay, just a couple of things, and again, I'll try and be really brief. I wanted to speak a little bit about the wonderful energy of the free markets. I think that the petition that Brian had speaks a lot to that, that there are a lot of people that are really invested in this kind of just this kind of community building, and it seems like a lot of people are talking about not just the free markets, but wanting to expand that energy. You know, it's not just something that happens for 3 hours, one weekend a month, but it's an energy that sort of, I think, is a very almost tangible part of Carrboro and the people that live here and the ideals that those people have. And so for me, the reason that the Sunday from 1:30 to 5:30 doesn't make sense is because it's not just about the free markets. You know, it's about having a puppet show that you want to have for kids that you can only do on Wednesdays, you know, or that that people have different schedules, different work schedules and different family schedules, and want to use that space for different things but feel really constrained, I think, by the registration process and the fee primarily. Okay. So practically, it seems like the sort of two main concerns that I've heard from folks from Parks and Rec are this worry that if they opened up the town commons for any free event to happen whenever, you know, whenever there was an open time slot for free, that there would just be this overwhelming amount of events and no other events would be able to take place there. Looking at their projection for what they think the events that will take place there next year, it seems like 12 of those events about are the free markets, and there are like 13 other events that they project will happen there. It doesn't seem like they're really imagining a super overflow of events happening, and although I do imagine that some more, like, more events would happen if the policy was changed, it's hard to imagine. I mean, I live right by that space, and I go by it, I bike by it all the time, and it's empty all the time, and it's just really hard to imagine that space getting so overused that nobody could use it when they wanted to. So that's that. And then the other issue that folks from Parks and Rec have brought up is extra work. And I've gone to Parks and Rec to register for the space, and it's taken about 5 minutes, 10 if the computer is really slow. It seems like it's not so much to ask for 5 extra minutes, you know, a couple of days, a month of their time to make this space really accessible for a lot of people to do a lot of the different things that the people in Carrboro want to be doing there. I think that's about all, unless you have questions.
Thanks, Monica. Perfect.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mark? I want to start with, I was very interested in the email we got from Vinci earlier, and I don't know if this is agreeing with Joel or just following her point that, I mean, I don't think that we need our staff to be figuring out what builds community or not, but I think the stipulations that a event without a reservation fee would be open to the public and the idea that it would be non-exclusive so that, in other words, you can reserve the space, but you can't prevent someone else from reserving the space and doing something else. You know, it may be that at some point that led to an overbooking, but I think that's something that, or
a bridge we could cross when we came to it and see if we needed a readjustment. But so I would like to move that we have the free reservation based on the stipulations the staff presented about staff not working the event, no money exchange, no electricity, that the event is free and open to the public and non-exclusive, to add those three stipulations. And I think those will further narrow who will decide to take advantage of a free event in terms of, at the same time as broadening it, because it'll broadening the use, as Monica was just suggesting. So anyway, that's my motion, and that otherwise that we not change the fee to $75, but we keep it at $100.
Second. For the-
Can I ask a question of staff? So, for example, not that I'm going to get married again, but if somebody wanted to have a wedding during the same period and wanted exclusive, if they signed up for it, they would get it exclusively? I just want to make sure I kind of understand what the process would be.
Right.
They would have to pay the $100.
Yeah. Right, they would have to pay the $100, but they would get it exclusively.
Mm-hmm. A paid reservation would be trump
a free reservation.
A free reservation if the paid reservation were made first.
Okay.
Right. So let me get this straight, that instead of securing Sunday afternoons, we're saying, you know, that the really, really free market would rather go with Saturdays and possibly be trumped?
No, we're not talking about this is not a policy. This is not about the really, really free market.
Well, I'm just saying,
but it's whoever wants to be able to know that they can have an event at a certain time at the town commons,
but
can accommodate that without a reservation.
But the staff recommendation was that the town can offer a time slot on Sunday from 1:30 to 5:30.
Well, that's not a recommendation. That was a discussion item.
Well,
with the recommendation we had in our previous packet is the one I was.
But I think it's a viable recommendation, and what I'm not understanding is why a group, any group, would give up the opportunity to have a secure time that's free when on a Saturday, even if they want that time, they could be trumped by a group that was paying. I mean, isn't that what we're saying?
I think we are saying that.
So,
but I think they seem to be.
Well, that's what we're hearing from citizens.
Come up to the podium if you're going to do it.
Please.
And state your name again, if you would.
James, again. The answer to that question is really simple. That only provides 4 hours a week. The Clever Town Commons sits empty almost all week. There might be an event Thursday. Some people want to do a puppet show about something going on, some political, social event, or I'm a substitute teacher, right? Like maybe I want to have hang out with my kids and we're going to do an extra history lesson or something like that, right? We can't do everything on a Sunday. It doesn't make sense to have a policy that recognizes the needs for free events to be fee-less at the Carborough Town Commons, but have them only be available in this little tiny slot on Sundays. It makes a lot more sense to have them, if they fit the guidelines that Vinci's proposal is in there, they can be any time of the week, right? So if I want to take my kids down there and do a puppet show about this, that, and the other, and it's not exclusive, I only need one little portion under the awning and anything else could go on in the rest of the space, I can call Parks and Rec and say, we're going to be there from so-and-so, I'm going to put up some flyers about it, which is currently we can't do.
I'm really, here's my dilemma. I'm really talking, this is two different things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to protect a time and a space for the really, really free market
mm-hmm.
that's really free consistently and doesn't get bumped by something else, as opposed to, these spontaneous events.
Well,
and I think that's
Randy,
two
they don't
things.
Want you to do that. They want you to let them have the market on Saturday without a reservation fee.
I understand that.
For them.
I understand that.
Them.
But they're asking for two different things by saying that they, in addition to the really, really free market, there's another time that there are other times that spontaneously folks want to sign up for it.
It's not an addition to the free market. The free market fits under these guidelines that Vinci sent to y'all, and that's part of the reason for the guidelines, right? The free market could call and reserve, say, the first Saturday of every month from 1:30 to 4, we're going to be there. You already knew that, to
mm-hmm.
Parks and Rec.
Mm-hmm.
And then that fits under the guidelines that Vinci says. It's not two proposals. It's not that at all. It's just something broader that recognizes the need for other free events like the free market.
But you do understand, though, that under his motion, if I understand you correctly, that if I decide, I always have to use the marriage one because that's the only one I can think of. Yeah. Or if I decide,
you have a bar mitzvah.
Oh, thank you, a bar mitzvah in 4 years. and I want to have it out at the town commons, and I pay the money on the first Sunday.
Right.
Then I'm going to bump you, and there will be no free market. Right. And is that acceptable?
On the first Sunday?
Saturday.
That's my question.
But she's saying, so what if she shows up and reserves it, and so when you call and say we're having the free market, Parks and Rec says, well, somebody's already paid to exclusively have it. Do you follow?
So the question is whether or not the motion allows for free events to reserve space. In
no,
other words,
it's not, it's, or you can be preempted.
You can be preempted by paying
customers.
Right.
And it is to pay.
I mean, that exists. I mean, that would still be an improvement upon the current situation.
I mean, it seems like it would be ideal if they wanted to reserve that space for the free market, but that the larger question is one that's more important to the people that go to the free markets.
But see, here's my thing. You know, it's even though it's not used, and I recognize there's some underuse of town commons, because, you know, people have jobs 8 to 5, so they're in Raleigh or, you know, on campus somewhere, they're not really out on the commons. But if I decide to pay that $100 and push you out of the way, not to say that I am, but if that happens, what then happens? You know, you can have a little bit of chaos, but in any system, there's got to be a little bit of order.
Excuse me.
Okay, sure, go ahead.
Jackie, anybody? And we might get to you in a minute. Right.
I've often thought that it's fine to reserve the commons and use it for a bar mitzvah or a concert or just standing in it if you want it all to yourself. But that in the times when it's not being used, it is already being paid for by the taxpayers of Carrboro. They already own it and are paying for it. So if it's not reserved for a paid event and you're having an event that anybody can come to, that you're not making money off of, that you're not being exclusive, then it's your place and you should be able to use it. And so, you know, that's why I seconded Dan's motion, because we're already on it. We're already paying for it.
No, so I'm not disagreeing with Dan's motion. I'm just trying to figure out, do they understand that with Dan's motion, there's a potential
They could get bumped.
That's the only thing I'm just trying to. Go
ahead, Brian.
Okay. Perhaps there's a misunderstanding.
Come up to the podium if it's more than yes or no.
Yeah. We're used to having our own.
The people are watching at home, and we keep a record of these meetings.
People just identify the organizers. You know?
Right. There's actually been some intimidation as a result of the confusion last summer. But I'll, you know, happily say something about the free market here. First of all, it seems like there's a little bit of confusion as to what getting bumped means. As I understand it, the reservations are available on a first-come, first-served basis, but it wouldn't be the case under Vinci's proposal that somebody who is willing to pay would then trump someone who
if they came first.
If they came first.
Right, same as it is now. So if I got there at 9 a.m. and paid $100, you got there at 9:35.
Right.
Slow by the bus or traffic or what have you, then I would have that space. And you couldn't have the really, really free market.
And we do already run into that issue every now and then with the people who like to dance over at the Century Center. And occasionally there's a conflicting appointment and that type of thing. I mean, it happens.
Right. So I just want people to understand.
Okay. Right.
That.
Well, that would be a risk.
That would be a risk.
I'll throw out, before I sit down, I'll throw out what occurs to me as the most obvious solution to that would be to reserve the space that if everyone here agrees that the really, really free market is of value and of service to the town of Carrboro, it would simply be to reserve the space and time for Saturday afternoons for the free market, as it's been occurring,
and then also to make Vinci's proposed change to the town policy.
You know,
let
me say the only thing that bothers me about that. I mean, that's an interesting idea, and it would be a tidy solution. But you know, the question becomes then, you know, well, so what happens when the next group comes and
right.
asks for similar treatment? And
right.
The only folks that we allow to do essentially that right now is the farmers market, and that is an officially sanctioned town event, and that's why we do it in that particular case.
It's a contract.
Well, but
and
do they?
Yeah, they do.
So they pay and they have insurance.
Thanks. Thank you, farmers market. Okay. Anyway, point being that you know you sort of run into this situation of how does that policy treat other organizations, you know, that are similarly situated in a similar way. So. But anyway.
But what I'm trying to look at is how do you create a win-win out of this? So that
well, I, okay. Let me recognize John and then Alex.
Can I remember reading a fascinating email about the different activities, community building activities that, you know, hypothetical scenarios, and I love it. It was great. Except when I got to the point of the dance troupe coming into town and they can also perform and add to the activities going on there. And my lights went on, and like I have three kids who get hurt all the time because they are worse than I am, and a little bit clumsy. And like, what happens? I just want to know whose liability is it if somebody gets hurt in one of these events.
It's going to be our lives or ours.
Yeah. Depending on how it happens, but yeah, potentially it's ours.
And if I could interject another issue while you are discussing this. The food issue continues to be a real concern from a liability standpoint from the town. I'm not going to beat a dead horse, but I need to just simply remind you all that the liability is on the town. It's not like the farmers market that carries its own insurance and has us as a named insured on the policy. If there's an issue out there involving food, it's on us. It's on the town.
Okay. And we can have a discussion at some point about that that issue, but we're right now on reservation policy.
But I'm not
to dismiss the point at all.
But it is a part of the reservation policy because right now,
well,
we've required it. You know, we haven't.
Right.
For the really, really free market, that's been sort of held in abeyance, but everybody else has had to have insurance if they've had food.
God.
No.
The issue is essentially that, you know, we're not in a position to know anything about how it's prepared or where it's prepared or whatever.
Who prepared? We don't know.
Yeah.
It's anonymous.
Okay. Alex.
I'm experiencing a little bit of cognitive dissonance here in that I thought the proposal put forward by staff to set aside a time on Sundays, which would be reserved for these kinds of activities, seemed like a reasonable thing to do. Yes. And I've been getting lots of sanctimonious lectures about sharing and good vibes and all this stuff, and that conflicts with the response to that proposal, which is, I want it for free, and I want it when I want it. That's not a compromising position. And so that's where they lost me on this argument.
Well, except that if I can jump in response to that, I don't think, I think part of the point is, yes, one gentleman said that they'd rather have it on Saturday, but the issue is not, you know, to me this is not simply about the really, really free market. It's more of a question of sort of the overall level of access that the public should have to the town commons.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I'm not, you know, again, I'm not. There's no good guys or bad guys. In this discussion, we're just trying to come up with something that accommodates
the public.
No,
we had
the
same problem 3 years ago, 4 years ago, with Friends of Bowling Creek and our Bowling Creek Festival. And we ended up, because of the food issues and because of the insurance issues, we moved it to Chapel Hill. You know, because we couldn't get it for free and we couldn't have food. So, you know, I mean, this, it is a bigger question. And you're absolutely right, Mark, that it's not easily explored.
Can I call my own question, or is someone else
have to do that? I'll call it, even though. How about I'll call for the question?
That'll help you out. I think that probably helped the whole meeting.
Pontificated ad nauseum. Let's be done with it.
Okay, so the motion that's before us, do you want to make an effort to?
The reservation is free. If staff does not work the event, no public access town hall bathrooms, no money exchanged during the event, electricity is not used, it is open to the public and non-exclusive.
Second.
Before the board on that, I mean, I need to know, can they do anything they want? Dances, risky stuff.
That doesn't say anything about the insurance policy. I mean, in other words, that's a reservation policy, but it's, you know, if you were going to have a fireworks show, there would be all sorts of insurance issues that would be involved in fire department.
Well, are we addressing that separately? Is that what you're asking, John?
I would like to know if, just to cover our back, if we're going to be sued for an accident besides, I mean, we're really taking a huge risk with food. I'm willing to take that risk as it is today, but if they're going to keep adding up, which I expect you to think to grow, with artistic events and performances, there has to be insurance, or a staff should have veto power to say, oh, you need to get insurance or get somebody, you know.
Well, we've given the staff some guidelines about what types of events. We've approved relatively within the last year some guidelines about that. Have we not?
Well, yeah, a year ago.
We think so, but I will have to say again that those guidelines, we believe, would apply specifically to the food served by the really, really free market, and that's been held in abeyance. So it's put staff in an extremely awkward position, and we just need some guidance. Do it or don't do it. And there are other guidelines that, you know, size of gatherings and so forth that kick in with the insurance, but one is the food issue. And if the board's willing to accept that liability, that's fine, but we just need to
know. Let me put it into a different context. Whether or not somebody has to pay for the reservation is that's a separate question from what type of insurance and what the town's liability is, because the fact is that whether you're holding the really, really free market with a reservation fee or without it, it presents the same liability issues. Do you see what I'm saying? We're not exposed to any more liability by virtue of them paying or not paying a reservation fee.
Correct.
But the motion is based on reservation.
That issue is just still out there hanging.
Let's
vote on this damn thing. There's a motion on the table. Let's be done with it. Christ.
Okay. Let's go ahead.
Okay, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
Nay.
Okay, so the motion passes 4-3.
No, it fails. 4-3. Because he voted no, he voted no, I voted no, and she voted no.
Who's she?
I'm sorry, Randy.
It's not, right. It's not clearly enough stipulated for me.
Okay.
That's it. Let's move on to the next one.
That amounts to cancellation of the really, really free market, as far as I can tell.
Well, because unless we discuss the insurance piece, you can't leave it hanging out there. I mean, that's not the point, Randy. I understand that.
I'm perfectly happy to have a discussion about the insurance issue, but that's not on our agenda tonight. We don't have the information from the staff.
Well, then, I mean, my issue is if I felt like we were going to be able to discuss that at some point, then there would be clarification. But I think leaving it wide open creates that issue, you know, it creates a situation where we're not.
How does it relate to that fee?
Can I help both of y'all out? Because it's late in the evening and everybody has said things to people that was not nice, so I apologize in public. But we're not going to resolve this issue tonight at 5 till 11.
You're right.
And so what I think we can do is, as much as I hate to rediscuss stuff, I think we're going to have to discuss the insurance with the reservation together. Mm-hmm. And the question is, do we want to do it And I know now you want to kill me, but I'm going on vacation, so you can be ugly to me in 2 weeks. Do we want to discuss it either the 19th, or y'all can discuss it next week, doesn't matter to me, on the 26th or the 19th with the information about the insurance, or do you want to wait until the whatever the first?
If it's affecting the if it's going to affect the budget, we have to do it next week. Right, the final
can I ask what information you want about insurance?
I guess for some,
it's in the packet what the current policy
right.
is.
Right. I think clearly.
And what's the proposed change to that? I mean, what is right. it that needs to be discussed about that? Because
what can happen with what?
It's not being enforced. As
it's not opinion. Being enforced. That's what's going on.
Then give the staff some direction to enforce the policy. I don't think there's any need for a change in the insurance policy. And whether the insurance policy is being enforced or not doesn't relate to the question of what the fee ought to be for using town
common. That's true.
Right. And last fall.
So why are you linking into that?
Yeah, that doesn't make last September, we asked the staff to put up signs instead of enforcing it. So that was our direction at that time. So if you want to change the direction, you can
maybe she wants
that.
To let us think about it. Give us 7 days to think about it if she wants to change it on 14.
But Mark's right. It doesn't have any impact on the reservation fee one way or the other.
You're not going to move it from that. If you talk to her till 11:30, it doesn't appear that she's going to change her mind.
I'm
just warning
right.
you, boy.
And you remember the last time she wasn't going to change her mind. That was.
When was that?
They took extra meetings for sure.
That's exactly
all right.
Right. So I'm just move on.
All right.
But right now. Next.
Are there any other budget matters that the board wishes to discuss?
Right. What's next? Is there anything next?
Mr. Manager, do you have adequate direction on the budget?
I think so.
Well.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
No, we got to do the health insurance thing.
Oh, crap. Okay.
Do we need to do that tonight?
We really, because if you don't act on it tonight, you've acted on it. It means we can't do it this year. Okay. And that immediately adds a 2% cost increase on insurance to the town and to all of our employees who have employee and one or family coverage.
I'll make this real quick. I really, really hate that we have to do this. But we're stuck. I'll move the item.
Second.
Motion for resolution 209. I think it's been moved and seconded. We're just in a position where we have to make what will have I think very minor impact on our retirees' health care coverage, but will have a very very major impact on the town's balance sheet, on our bottom line, on our credit rating with our bond rating agencies and. We simply have no meaningful choice about this. Does anybody else have any comment?
It kind of, I just have to say, it galls me that we do one thing for people that work part-time and then for people who work full-time and gave a lot of service to the town, we're changing that. I understand the reasons and everything, but to me they are inextricably linked.
The difference in my mind, for what it's worth, is the amount of money involved. But
I'm
going to vote against it because, and I understand why everybody who's voting for it is voting for it, and I really respect that. We vote against it. We're going to pay for it one way or the other. You know, it'll come out of our other taxes, not our town taxes. It's just. Horrible, and I hope that the CEOs and the insurance companies are enjoying their multi-million dollar salaries and bonuses.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah.
He's supposed to wish them something, you know.
But maybe not in public. Okay.
Certainly not on
it's been
here.
Moved and seconded for the to pass the resolution. All those in favor?
Ordinance.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry. The motion is for.
We all know what the motion is to adopt the attached ordinance.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
I have a.
What was the division on that? That was
5-2.
Okay.
I have a very brief, time-sensitive matter from Senator Kinnaird. If you would bear with me for a minute.
You got a minute.
Is,
go.
Okay. Which is that the Senate budget is calling for the elimination of the State Energy Office, which is a really, really bad idea. And she suggested that a resolution from us or a letter from the mayor.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded that we contact our legislators.
Thank you all.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously.
Justin, please.
Been moved.
I'm moving it with all of us.
Seconded. We adjourned. All those in favor?
Aye.
Signify by saying aye.